Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Sam Litzinger. Emergency officials in Missouri say for now, sandbag piles in many areas are holding back the floodwaters. But things aren't so encouraging in Foley, where residents were evacuated because of rising water. Three levees along the Mississippi broke, which is actually taking some of the pressure off communities downstream.
This is Jim Crisula in Hannibal, Missouri. They are keeping their fingers crossed here in what's called America's hometown. The town's flood wall and levees are succeeding, at least for the time being, in holding back the mighty Mississippi. Although some streets are underwater, town leaders are confident most places will stay dry.
The weather forecast, more rain this weekend for parts of Missouri and Iowa. The weather problem in Southern California, heat well above 100 degrees in some places.
Feels good. It's like so hot right now.
I'm wide brim. I got sunblock all over me.
White sneakers, white socks, light colored pants, white t-shirt, and a white hat.
A lot of water. You have to. If you don't drink a lot of water, it'll do you in.
And Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has told emergency officials to be on standby for more extremely high and dangerous temperatures over the weekend. Former White House spokesman Scott McClellan says President Bush has lost the public's trust because so many in his administration have lied or misled.
I regret that I played a role, however unintentionally, in relaying false information to the public about it.
Speaking before a House panel, he advised the president to embrace openness and candor. Not everyone's happy about it, but CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss says the House has passed a bill that essentially shields telecommunications companies that cooperated with the government's warrantless eavesdropping program.
While there's plenty of controversy over the wiretaps themselves, the big hang-up on this bill was retroactive immunity for phone companies, and they basically got it. There are dozens of lawsuits against them for violating Americans' rights by letting the government listen to phone calls and read emails without warrants in violation of the law. This bill says if a judge agrees the government asked them to do it, the phone companies are off the hook.
The bill now goes to the Senate, and it's expected to President Bush for his signature soon. Pentagon officials say Israel may have been trying to send Iran a message when it staged a big military exercise in the Mediterranean. Israel says it's deeply concerned about Iran's nuclear program, and presidential contender Barack Obama says he understands.
There is no doubt that Iran poses an extraordinary threat to Israel, and Israel is always justified in making decisions that will provide for its security.
Israel won't confirm or deny the exercises were practiced for a possible strike against Iran. On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 220 points. The NASDAQ was off 56. The S&P 500 down 25. Why the down day? Worries about the financial and automotive sectors and rising oil prices. The Dow is now at its lowest level in 3 months. One analyst says this was an ugly way to end the week. This is CBS News.
Who's excited for our big road trip?
I'm excited to hear you say bad words when we get lost again.
Now, son, Mommy got Daddy a Garmin Nuvi 780 for Father's Day. Nuvi 780 has preloaded maps, so Daddy will never get lost again. And Daddy got this neat subscription to MSN Direct so we can avoid traffic delays, get local weather, and gas prices.
Will you honk the horn with your head again?
It's a new day, son. It's a Garmin Nuvi day.
To receive MSN Direct content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Another effect of high gas prices. Here's CBS News correspondent Jim Taylor.
You could call it the bartender's blues.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got.
It takes all those tips.
The tips are definitely the lion's share of any bartender's income.
David Craver, president, National Bartenders Association.
There are less people are actually going out to restaurants, so there's less traffic in the restaurants, and the people that are in there are actually tipping a little less. So combined, it's definitely put a crimp on things.
He says $5 tippers are now $2 or $3 tippers. He blames patrons' miserly ways on the high cost of gas. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Calling all cars, be on the lookout for about 40 pink plastic flamingos that have gone missing in Lincoln, Nebraska. The birds are used as a fundraising flock by a local women's group, which plants them on someone's lawn, then solicits donations to get them off. But some plastic purloiner made off with the things without paying. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
I'm going to say 8 words you won't believe. Buying a used car should not be painful. Now, here are 4 words that prove it. Honda certified used cars. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low APR financing on all Pilot certified used Honda models. Made you a believer, didn't I? Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda. Honda certified used cars.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
In Peter B.'s America, there would be no warrantless wiretapping. Welcome to the program today. It's a sizzling summer day around San Francisco Bay. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. Yes, some Democratic souls were sold today.
Just
105 Democrats voted to legalize the lawbreaking of the Bush administration and immunize the telephone companies who cooperated. We'll talk about that in a moment with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Later this hour, Joe Cirincione, now of the Plowshares Fund, used to be at the Center for American Progress, and before that, the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. Joe will be here in our secret studio, and we're going to talk about what's going on at Plowshares, the status of forces agreement in Iraq, and the new group of foreign policy advisors assembled for Barack Obama. They look a lot like the old Democratic Guard to me, and Joe Cirincione used to be an advisor on foreign policy to Barack Obama. We'll see if he's still in that circle. Next hour, writer Robert Scheer returns to our program. He's a fascinating man who's interviewed just about every president in my lifetime except for George W. Bush. And he's got a new book out called Pornography of Power. You'll hear all about it next hour. And as usual, in our third and final hour, Brad Friedman, who did such a great job sitting in for me last week, he'll be with us live from the road. I believe he's in Oregon today. And we'll check in with him, talk election protection. And there's a guy named Brad, Bradley Schlotzman, one of those tainted U.S. attorney appointments, a crony of Karl Rove's who made the news this week. That's just one of the items we'll talk about with Bradness coming up in our third hour. You're welcome to call the program, and we pay for the call. In fact, I just sent the check in to the toll-free company today. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, and today only. My nephew, Liam, is handling the phone calls, so be nice to him. He's new at this, but he's a good guy, and he will take care of you if you decide to call the program, and we welcome your comments and questions. Again, 888-5-PETER-B. Robert Perry is a journalist who worked for the Associated Press, Newsweek, Frontline, and now publishes at his own website, consortiumnews.com. His most recent book, co-authored with two of his sons, is Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. And, Bob Perry, for me, this is one of those real depressing days to see the Democrats do a double cave. They capitulated on the funding for the war in Iraq, and they want to distract us by saying, look here, we got unemployment benefits. Look here, we got a GI Bill. But the bottom line there is that we're continuing to fund this misguided occupation. And I was really sickened by the debate and the ultimate vote over the FISA law today. I've been encouraged that the Democrats were holding firm against the very bad bill that came out of the United States Senate. But over the last few months, Steny Hoyer, most notably, has been working to undermine that position, and the big compromise was passed today.
That's right, Peter. It was the double cave-in. And I guess if you look at Barack Obama's choice of some of his advisors, you may call it a triple cave-in because it seems like there's a real backing away from trying to do much that's different.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a real fundamental constitutional issue about the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, about the supremacy of law over presidential whim. And while the Democrats make a case that what they passed in the House today is a little better than the Senate bill, fundamentally they're letting the phone companies off the hook, and they are giving amnesty to them and to the administration officials who broke the law to impose this program. And we will never find out key elements of it, like why the hell did it start before 9/11? I mean, I heard Lamar Smith up there again this morning trotting out the same old lies that, well, after 9/11, to protect the American people, the president ordered this surveillance program. The request to the telecom companies started in February and March of 2001. That's never been explained, and the Democrats have helped cover that up.
Right. There's never been any kind of serious public examination of this. And that is a big question, because you do have the company in Denver saying that there were these requests that came in months before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
That has never been fully explained. The American people have been kept in the dark on it. It exists kind of there, but no one quite knows what it meant, if it was entirely accurate or if something else was happening.
Well, and there's one of these murky prosecutions. Joe Nocchio, who is the CEO of Quest Communications and declined the honor of spying on his customers, he went to jail for an alleged insider trading case. I don't know the details there, but I have questions.
Well, the Democrats, even after taking power in 2007, simply have not done any kind of serious, sustained oversight. Maybe they've done more and a bit better than what the Republicans were doing before that, because they were engaged in full-scale cover-up of anything Bush did. But the Democrats have not distinguished themselves, and I'd include even people like Congressman Waxman, who tends to do these drive-by hearings, one-day hearings that bring up a few interesting things, and you don't hear about them again for months. There's been no effort to do a Fulbright-style review of of how we got into Iraq, similar to what Fulbright did on Vietnam. You've seen no large investigation like the Iran-Contra investigation, even, which I was not a huge fan of back in the 80s, but at least it was an effort to pull together a serious investigation, have a serious report afterwards to lay out some of the evidence. We haven't seen that kind of thing happening, and the ball has been dropped almost across across Capitol Hill, from the House and Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee to the Senate. There's been very little that you can point to and say that's really a good case of serious congressional oversight.
Well, and this comes at a time when the Valerie Wilson cover-up is crumbling with a little help from Scott McClellan. A little ironic that there was McClellan testifying today, which is an opening for the Democrats against the Bush administration, and they had to interrupt that to go vote up the FISA bill, which is a big victory for the administration and preserves their secrecy and their law-breaking. It's phenomenal that these two events juxtaposed. And earlier in the week we had some incredible testimony about the origins of the torture policy and an excellent report coming out of the Senate Armed Services Committee that shows that this was not a bottom-up
development. It was a top-down approval of torture. And so, you know, given that those are cracks in this stone wall that the Bush administration has successfully erected, it's doubly disappointing that the Democrats would cave on the war funding and on this FISA law in the same breath.
Well, I think that's all true. And the it was ironic to watch also the Republicans continue to mount these spirited defenses of George Bush, continuing to do the talking points, these often highly dishonest talking points about Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame. We saw that during the Judiciary Committee hearing today.
Lamar Smith is doing the job Scott McClellan used to do.
Right. Lamar Smith mocked McClellan, started off this hearing saying this was the first Book of the Month Club that the Judiciary Committee was going to be holding. And then next, there was, maybe we should do Ann Coulter.
Yeah, wasn't that disgusting?
So it was that kind of ridicule, dripping sarcasm, misinformation. The Republicans continue to almost congressman by congressman present as in these kinds of situations, where the Democrats continue to try to be very reasonable and not push things too far and stay within facts. It's amazing to watch these two things parallel. Now, I think ideally, yes, you want to be careful in pursuing, but there also should be an aggressiveness when issues of this seriousness are in play.
The other thing that's ironic here, Bob, and you and I haven't talked about Dennis Kucinich and his articles of impeachment, but we spent an hour the other day going through them one by one to try to help people understand the scope of the lawbreaking and the impeachable offenses that are right before our eyes. And I understand the arguments from the Democratic leadership, which I don't buy, that they want to pass on this at this time. But we even heard Conyers reference impeachment as he gave his introductory remarks before McClellan spoke today.
Well, and you also have this bizarre quality to the FISA bill, which is that, and Nancy Pelosi made this a centerpiece of her statement today, which was that one of the most important elements of this new FISA bill, she said, was that it reasserts that the president has to obey the law. And yet what was happening in the whole process was that his previous violation of the law and the people who helped him, the telecom companies, were being given a pass. So the real precedent that's being set is if a president decides he wants to break the law, he can get away with it. It's almost like an indulgent parent of a spoiled child saying, well, you know, this time we mean it. And not really holding people accountable, but just simply reasserting that yes, the president's supposed to obey the law, even when the obvious fact is he didn't.
And I saw Pelosi's comments before the vote, and I was so disappointed. I've known her for many years and have had a high regard for her. Some of my listeners know I worked as a campaign consultant for her once. But this deeply disappoints me because she started off with a false choice, saying that there had to be a bill. And that's simply not true. The FISA law remains in effect. The president has a legal means to conduct this kind of surveillance, and it's not good enough for him. So he keeps pushing, and, you know, she stated, well, we couldn't not pass a bill, so this compromise is the best we could come up with. Well, I reject that premise vigorously because it's been 4 months since that bad bill from last year, the Protect America Act, expired, and there's no evidence, despite the hand-wringing from the right, that we are exposed in any way or that our intelligence capabilities have been limited because of it.
I think what you're seeing from the Democrats is really an effort to put a certain amount of insurance into the before the elections. What they're deathly afraid of, which they've always been afraid of, is that something will happen and they'll be blamed for it, that they were soft on terror. And so they're pushing this through, I think, as much because they want to be able to say, see, we did something. And the president even said he thought it was great. He was happy to sign it, basically declared victory over us. And so that's the position the Democrats seem to be taking. And it's when you're getting into issues like the Fourth Amendment and fundamental rights under the Constitution, to play those kinds of political games are deeply disturbing. I should point out, though, that the majority of Democrats did vote against this bill.
That's right.
Even though the House leadership pushed it through with the support of of virtually all the Republicans.
We're going to take a break, and we'll pick up there about that idea of insurance as we talk about the Democratic strategies that I find so disappointing, and I think it's bad politics, my view. What do you think? You can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can drop me an email, too. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Have you noticed that everyone is talking about being green? High-efficiency light bulbs, recycling, sustainable products that are healthy for us and crucial to our environment. Well, check out the new furniture store in town that is totally green. The name is SC41 Furniture, and it's our grand opening. Our mattress systems are designed to feel better, last longer, and sleep deeper. They're made from naturally ecologically healthy components, like high-quality latex that holds its shape and provides extra support. SC41 also offers sustainable furniture that is made in the old-world craftsman style with no harmful chemicals, non-toxic stains, solid wood construction, and formaldehyde-free glues. Sustainable style for the rest of your life. So if you want to better the environment and live healthier without compromising comfort, quality, or beauty, come visit the new store in town, SC41 Furniture, on 41st Avenue across from the Home Depot in Santa Cruz.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Experience the magic of Scotland and Ireland without ever leaving Monterey County. The 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival will be held on Saturday and Sunday, July 5th and 6th, at the beautiful Toro Park on Highway 68 in Salinas. The Scottish Festival offers fun activities for the whole family, including great athletic events like the famous caber toss. You'll enjoy Scottish and Irish entertainers, great crafts, tasty British food, and sheepdog demonstrations. Enjoy the colourful mass pipe bands and Highland dancers, and don't miss the Saturday evening barbecue. Special Sunday entertainment with pipers and dancers. Put on your kilts, grab your bagpipes, or just come on down to the 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival. Information and advance tickets are available at montereyscottgames.com or call 831-333-9423.
You know you got a pocket.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Kind of like John Fogerty channeling Howard Beale. I can't take it no more. And it is hard to take when you elect a Democratic majority in 2006 with clear instructions to end the war and end the power grabs of the Bush administration, and it just doesn't happen. And not only that, we see it sold to us with the false choices, as I mentioned. They gloss over the funding for Iraq that's even more generous than what the president asked for, and feeds the war all the way through the first quarter, if not longer, in 2009. And it's very hard to figure out why they are operating in this manner. And Robert Perry's with us from ConsortiumNews.com. And Bob, just before the break, you were offering an idea of this kind of insurance where the Democrats are getting the bad news out of the way now. Barack Obama picked this moment to opt out of the public finance system. That's not going to win him friends in some circles. I certainly understand why he made that call. But it appears this is a week where everybody agreed to drop the bad news for progressives.
Well, you know, I think that may be true. I think the, as far as I'm concerned, I've never been a huge fan of the campaign finance system. I think it's been a mistake in some ways for the progressive community to invest so much effort into that, because the real way the right has been building up its political power is not through political donations, but by building a media infrastructure. Mm-hmm. From the Washington Times, through the Murdoch newspapers, the Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, you name it. And that's how the right's been investing heavily, and the progressive community has not really stepped up to the plate in regard to that. So the focus on campaign finance has really served to make it harder for people who are opposed to moneyed interests to win, not less. It's actually had the opposite effect, I think, from what it was intended. So. Yeah. I think that Obama is turning to the public and saying, I want to use a more democratic means of funding campaigns, i.e. through the Internet and small donations, is not such a big deal. I know people on the progressive side tend to view the campaign finance system as tremendously important. I'm not sure it really has worked out the way they intended.
Yeah, I'm a pragmatist, and my view is that Obama's made the right call here. There's no reason for him to unilaterally disarm to the weak level of John McCain. They're showing right now McCain's got $21,000 cash on hand that's earmarked for the general election. So he's at a huge disadvantage, and I just don't think there is a reason for Obama, in order to be politically correct, to hamstring his efforts to respond to Swift voters or other attacks like that. But talk a little bit about your thought about the Pelosi strategy here to, you know, fund the war well into next year, lard it up with some Christmas tree ornaments like unemployment benefits and the GI Bill, but fundamentally, the Democrats have caved. They have given up trying to change the course of this president's policies.
Well, they made that decision actually fairly early on in their control of Congress. I've looked at Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, as one of the chief culprits. As soon as he said, we will never be in a position where we do not fund the war, we'll have to pass these measures through legislation for deadline or for timelines to get out of Iraq. Once he made that concession, there was no way the war was going to be stopped. There had to be a point where the Congress faced down the president over the war and said, we're not going to fund it anymore. Then the president would have to get the supermajorities to pass his funding. Mm-hmm. But once the Democrats acceded on that point, they basically ran up the white flag. And what you saw today with the approval or the agreement on, as you say, giving the president more than he even asked for on the war, was sort of the final stage of that surrender. But that surrender's been in motion for a long time.
And the calculation is that they need to win in November at all costs. But those costs are things that I don't think are politically wise. And number two, I don't think they're morally correct. Bob, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Peter.
Robert Perry, read his work at ConsortiumNews.com. Joe Cirincione is scheduled to join us next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
From
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Visa. Visa Business knows there's nothing small about small business. I'm Charles Osgood. With a dollar worth so much less now and cash flow a problem for so many businesses, especially startups, some entrepreneurs are doing what Cleveland Cook did last year at his new Miami Beach advertising and branding agency he calls Can I Have Your Attention? He needed an accountant, and he made a deal with a new accounting firm started by former corporate accountant Claudia Peralta. If her outfit would do his accounting for him, his outfit would create a logo, a website, postcards, and other things that she needed for her business. A cashless trade. According to Entrepreneur.com, cashless exchanges of business services are helping to keep some new businesses in business despite the economy. The story after this.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world, and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
I'm going to say eight words you won't believe. Buying a used car should not be painful. Now, here are four words that prove it. Honda certified used cars. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low APR financing on all Pilot certified used Honda models. Made you a believer, didn't I? Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda. Honda certified used cars.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, some businesses are saying. You do for me, I'll do for you, and no cash will we be paying. For any small business, especially a starter, in an economy like this, you can prime the pump with barter. If someone else has what you need and you can use what they do, you help each other out. It isn't economic voodoo. There are barter groups that you can join, and often what makes sense is to help some other company and lower your expenses. You may pay a fee for membership, but still come out ahead. If what you get, you'd have to buy with Do-Re-Mi instead. As long as it is something you can actually use, it's a win-win situation. And what do you have to lose? These outfits issue credits, vouchers that all concerned keep track of, and use when someone has what someone else may have a lack of. Before money was invented, the case is often made, people did for one another and took it out in trade. The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s of these broadcasts can be found at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Fritti di Mar Grill in Marina is a delicious haven for lovers of Italian seafood pasta and salads at neighborly prices. Owners Tito and Sonia Perez invite you to their new restaurant, Fritti di Mar Grill, for lunch or dinner weekdays and on Saturdays from 4 p.m. Every tasty meal comes with generous portions of Salvadoran warmth. Fritti di Mar Grill is at 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in friendly Marina. Browse to FrittiDiMarGrill.com or call 384-8525.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them.
white lungs. We live and die them.
34 minutes past the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on.
Tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies, no. Never ever going to tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies, no. Never ever going to tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies, it's time. It's time to go home.
Joining me this half hour is Joe Cirincione. He is now the president of the Plowshares Fund based here in San Francisco. He has a long history of foreign policy expertise with an angle toward peace. He worked at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. He was a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and then jumped over to Plowshares just a few months ago. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Peter. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, it's always good to talk with you, and there's a lot to talk about. Just to give you a heads up, I want to talk about the SOFA negotiations in Iraq, and that's not about sleeper SOFA. I want to talk about the truce that has broken out between Israel and Hamas.
Yeah.
And also the Swiss nuclear family called the Tinners that finally got some coverage in the New York Times earlier this week. But I wanted to start off by asking if you are still an advisor on national security and foreign policy issues to Senator Barack Obama, because he convened a panel of the old guard this week. And some bloggers noted that progressives like you and Larry Korb had been advising the candidate, and now there's a new round of people. So I'm curious to know if you're still in the picture there.
Well, you can't believe everything that's on the blogs, and my role was significantly overstated. Of course, as the president of Plowshares, we're a nonpartisan organization, and we work with Republicans and Democrats. In my private capacity, I was one of hundreds of people that consulted with the campaign and have written memos and continue to write memos advising the campaign. But the kind of list that was unveiled this week are really the senior established national security and foreign policy experts that have been in previous administrations. And I wouldn't read too much into it, but whether it signifies, you know, some kind of shift or not, I didn't interpret it that way. It's the kind of groups of you know, veterans that you would want around advising a candidate. And
Joe, Senator Obama continues
to draw on a vast pool of people who are offering their expertise and services.
Mm-hmm. Some of these people were on the Clinton campaign team and are now free agents, so to bring in Madeleine Albright, for example, is not a big shock to me. But honestly, Lee Hamilton was probably a pretty good congressman for his district in Indiana, but he served on a lot of these commissions and study groups over the last 10 to 15 years, and frankly, I don't have respect for him in that capacity. I feel that he's soft-pedaled issues. I feel the 9/11 commission was, deeply flawed. And so to reach out to an old dog like him doesn't give me confidence that Senator Obama means what he says about turning the page.
Mm. Well, if the President of the United States had listened to what Lee Hamilton and Jim Baker said in the Iraq Study Group, our troops would be coming home from Iraq now. We would be in a sustained and serious dialogue with Iran now. We would have put together a diplomatic offensive in the Middle East that could be making Israel more secure and the United States more secure by bringing all the parties into negotiations, into discussions. So I personally have a lot of respect for the, let's just say, the latest things Lee Hamilton has done in his long career. And I think the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, bipartisan group, are perfectly in line with what you hear many candidates, including many politicians, including Senator Barack Obama, saying now. I understand what you're saying, but I wouldn't sell Lee Hamilton short.
Okay. And I hear what you're saying. I do understand that while the Iraq study group, I think, was a distraction used by the president to manipulate, well, to buy time, manipulate public opinion, ultimately ignore 90% of what they offered. Yes, you know, they had some good proposals at that time, but I never really took the whole process seriously. And unfortunately, Congressman Hamilton has been a party to a lot of those kinds of groups and commissions over the years. The other person I'm concerned about is Sam Nunn of Georgia, because, you know, I feel that he's a very conservative man. And he threw that monkey wrench into the first days of the Clinton administration, balking on allowing gays to serve openly in the military. And I just feel that, again, if Obama's serious about moving forward, I'd like to see some fresh faces there.
Well, let me talk to you about Sam Nunn just for a second, because I worked on the staff of the House Armed Services Committee during the 80s and 90s. And Sam Nunn was the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee and a conservative Southern Democrat at that time. I think he's still would call himself a conservative or moderate. But what's happened is the President of the United States, George Bush, has moved the policies of the United States so far over to the right that people who you used to think of as conservatives are now your allies, just trying to right the ship of state before it tips over completely. And on my issues in particular, Sam Nunn is a hero. Sam Nunn is the co-chairman of the Nuclear Threat Initiative. He's one of the so-called four statesmen with George Shultz and Henry Kissinger and William Perry, two Democrats, two Republicans, who down at the Hoover Institution here in the Bay Area, down in Stanford University, mm-hmm. have put out a call for a world free of nuclear weapons. So Sam Nunn and the others, but Sam Nunn in particular, a man who helped build up the nuclear empire we
right.
now have,
mm-hmm.
is saying it's obsolete and it's time to take it down and has articulated a very clear path forward on how to do that. So I'm delighted that Sam is advising the senator. I think he'd be an excellent choice for vice president, frankly, somebody who could provide a lot of national security expertise. And on my issue, on nuclear proliferation, on getting the world to reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear weapons, you know, he would be leading the charge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's a very interesting take, and I appreciate it. We're talking with Joe Cirincione. He's now president of the Plowshares Fund, and you can visit their website. You have to spell Plowshares the old way, P-L-O-U-G-H, plowshares.org. And, Joe, up next, I wanted to talk about the situation in Iraq, because it appears that the Iraqis are prepared to suspend the negotiations with the United States over this status of forces agreement. The UN occupation mandate expires at the end of this year, so we either have to renew that or have to come up with a bilateral accord with the Iraqis. And some of the sticking points include immunity for criminal acts by U.S. soldiers and contractors, and also those pesky issues about the oil.
Yeah, but you can see what the Bush administration is trying to do in its waning months in office. It's trying to, you know, lock in its programs on a variety of issues, including anti-missile systems, trying to deploy new bases in Eastern Europe and sort of institutionalize anti-missile weapons as part of the U.S. arsenal. And in Iraq, it's trying to commit the United States to a long-term stay in Iraq, and many politicians in Congress have protested this, have warned that any agreement with the Iraqis should not extend past the life of this administration. So I think it's a good thing that the government of Iraq wants to suspend these talks. I don't want there to be a status of forces agreement that commits the United States to staying in Iraq past December of this year. I think the next president of the United States, if he listens to what the people want, we'll start withdrawing troops from Iraq as soon as possible. And by as soon as possible, I would mean within 90 days of assuming office.
Joe Cirincione, has the surge worked on any level by any measure?
Oh, I think you can trace some of the decrease in attacks to the presence of more forces. I think that there's some connection there, and you can't just dismiss that out of hand. But most of the decrease in violence has been not because the U.S. has put more boots on the ground, but because of political developments that have taken place in Iraq, most particularly some of the Sunni leaders deciding to turn against Al-Qaeda for their own interest, that Al-Qaeda was not their ally, and that was huge. Iran's influence has been very positive over the last few months, helping to convince some of the Shia factions not to engage in a sustained civil war against the Sunnis and to tamp down some of the intra-Shia fighting. So it's been political decisions by both the Sunnis and the Shias that have been largely resulted in the decrease in violence, not so much the U.S. military presence. But here's the thing that gets me. Let's say that we give the increased troop presence some credit for tamping down the violence. So doesn't that mean that now that we've allowed bought some time for the Iraqi troops to get a little better position, get a little more confidence, establish some more control in Iraq, doesn't that mean that now we can start thinking about withdrawal? The problem I have with the Bush administration is that they say either it's too violent and we can't leave, or now it's too peaceful and we can't leave. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any conditions under which they're willing to consider, you know, ending the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
Well, and Joe Cirincione, my view is that Muqtada al-Sadr really has the cards that matter. And he's operating in a rather wily way. There was a showdown there in Sadr City a few years ago, but a lot of his people, a lot of his people kind of melted away in the true form of guerrilla warfare. And I feel they're just lying in wait.
Well, you know, Mao used to say, you know, when the enemy advances, we retreat. When the enemy retreats, you know, we harass. And I think you're absolutely right. This is a classic insurgency tactic. And to be truthful, the Shia militias in there fighting against the Iraqi army and the other Shia factions. Remember, Iraq is controlled by Shia, and a good part of the army represents one faction in the Shia internal Iraqi struggle. It was very unpopular with the people. And Muqtada al-Sadr was losing some support because of his sustained violence. So both because of, you know, his own domestic political calculations and some of the influence of Iran to quiet things down, and a just sound guerrilla strategy, he's retreated. I don't see any sign that he's lost political influence. If anything, he might have gained some. But he's the one who lives there. They're there for the long term. I mean, there is not going to be a solution that's going to militarily defeat his forces. This is the only way to do this is what people have been saying for quite a long time. There has to be a political reconciliation among the Shia and then between the Shia and the Sunni.
Let's take a call. Joel in Aptos, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Joe Cirincione.
Thank you. Just a comment about the country moving to the right so far, and when the right depicts the Democrats or Obama as far left and a lunatic fringe, I think it's just, you know, we should be reminded that technically the far left would believe in the abolition of private property, and I don't think Barbara Boxer or Maxine Waters believes in the abolition of private property, and I just hope that you know, we can remind the right, when we hear people depict Obama that way, we can, you know, clarify that, I guess. That was my only comment.
Okay.
I think that's an excellent point, and it, you know, it's worth pointing out to people how far right the Bush administration is and how far out of the mainstream of traditional American values and traditional American politics that they are. I mean, for example, the idea that we would wage war against a country that hadn't attacked us, you know, this preemptive war doctrine. There have always been people who have advocated this in the U.S. national security system. People, Curtis LeMay wanted to attack China, before they could detonate a nuclear test in 1964. Some of the Joint Chiefs wanted President Kennedy to attack Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That view has always been there, but it's always been a minority view. It's always been rejected. It's only this administration that brought it into the main, you know, made it a major tenet of U.S. national security strategy and implemented it with disastrous result.
And, Joe, I regard this as one of the most radical administrations in my lifetime, and they've redefined radical as a right term. It always used to refer to the left.
I think that's exactly right, and what we're now seeing is that radical strategy crashing and burning, the collapse of the Bush doctrine, the idea that you could use the military to solve proliferation issues, that the U.S. could go around with changing regimes and remake the geopolitical structures of a country and a region as complex as the Middle East. They thought they could do this, that it'd be quick, cheap, and easy. It's been a disastrous policy. And what's encouraging to me is that this is now being broadly recognized by liberals, by moderates, and by conservatives.
We got to take a break.
The end of the Bush doctrine.
We'll continue with Joe Cirincione in just a moment. You can join us toll free. 888-5-PETER-B.
People who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We are all fools at one time or another. Buddha said the fool who knows he is a fool is much wiser. The fool who thinks he is wise is a fool indeed. How true this is. And for a while the fool's mischief tastes sweet, sweet as honey, but in the end it turns bitter, and how bitterly we suffer. Well, if you're interested in not suffering anymore and maybe want to take a different approach to your life, I might be able to help in one small way. Here on KRXA on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m., I offer my radio program Aspire. I hope you will do me the honor of listening, and maybe the two of us can find that divine wisdom that has always lived within us and we just were too foolish to recognize. Come Aspire.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's a sizzling hot day around San Francisco Bay. I hope wherever you are, you're in the shade and keeping cool. Joe Cirincione is with us, president of the Plowshares Fund. Their website, plowshares.org, as in turning swords into plowshares. And Joe, I know one of the things you work on very actively at Plowshares is trying to stop nuclear proliferation. And we have a pretty sorry history in recent years about proliferation. We we gave special preference to India in a deal that the president made about a year and a half ago. We demonized Iran for their alleged desire to develop a nuclear weapon. And yet we didn't do diddly to really rein in the work of AQ Khan, the father of the Pakistani nuke, who has been on house arrest for a few years. But we've learned recently, it was about a year ago, that Swiss authorities arrested the Tinner family, a father and two sons, who were apparently involved in spreading nuclear blueprints that came from AQ Khan. And this is of serious concern, and it also, you know, reflects on the way the Bush administration dispatched Valerie Wilson, who was working on non-proliferation issues at the CIA, and they thought so little of it that they didn't mind exposing her for political purposes. So it's a sorry record, but this story about the Tinner family finally surfaced in the U.S. media this week.
Yeah. I want to talk about that, but first I want to say, you know, I live in Washington, D.C., and we opened up the new Plowshares office in Washington, but the Plowshares Fund is based here in San Francisco out of Fort Mason, and you guys are so spoiled that you think this is a sizzling hot day. You know, if it's not above 90, it is not a hot day.
Well, we don't have the humidity either.
This weather is just about perfect. I'm enjoying every single minute of it, and I don't want to go home again. On the crisis, you're absolutely right. You know, this administration has made almost every proliferation problem they inherited back in 2000 worse, not better. They had this. They narrowly defined the problem as rogue regimes getting nuclear weapons. They identified the military as their major instrument of statecraft. They thought there was a military answer to a nonproliferation, just overthrow the regimes of the bad guys. And then they compounded the problem by rewarding their favored states like India for acquiring nuclear weapons and blessed their programs, thereby, you know, creating this double standard that told countries like Iran, for example, if you just hold out long enough, you can get the U.S. to accept your programs. And ignoring what was going on with the AQ Khan network. Eventually, they did have to crack down. And the U.S. and other countries helped break up the network, but not put it out of business completely. And here's to illustrate what I mean by the error of identifying the problem as only a small set of bad guys. Remember, it was Pakistan, our ally, Pakistan, who was peddling this nuclear technology around the world. If it wasn't for Pakistan, there wouldn't be an Iranian nuclear program. Pakistan sold the centrifuges and the equipment to Iran and Libya and North Korea. And now we find out that they also may have given them a bomb design, an actual design of an advanced plutonium-based nuclear weapon, small enough to fit on the tip of a missile. Mm-hmm. And again, it turns out it wasn't just the Pakistanis who were doing this. The middleman in this was a Swiss businessman named Tinner. And why was he doing this? For ideological reasons? Hatred of America? No. Money.
Yep.
He was selling it for money. And you have to see the complexity of this problem and understand that you need a lot of allies to solve this. This is a bigger problem than just a few bad guys, and it's why you need the kind of international cooperation that we have squandered over the past few years. You have to revive that international cooperation in order to be able to get guys like Tinner to shut down permanently networks like the AQ Khan network.
Joe Cirincione, a little over a minute remaining, and I was going to ask you about the Hamas truce with Israel, but I'm looking at your webpage, and today is World Refugee Day, and we have as many as 5 million Iraqis who have been displaced, about half inside the country, about half have been forced to leave, and this is another sorry legacy of our unilateral adventure there. What's the scope of the problem, and is anybody addressing it?
Well, It's a huge problem. We're not devoting the kind of resources we should be to this. And again, it's a narrow way of looking at the threat. You have to understand that there's lots of these transnational issues like migration that provoke instability in the world and then ultimately will harm U.S. interests. So yes, this is a national security problem. Refugees, displaced peoples, famines, droughts. Increased by the threat of global warming. These are the kinds of issues that you have to start including in your definition of what national security is if you're really going to provide for the protection of our nation, the protection of the livelihood of the American people.
Yeah. Well, I hope people will pay attention to that, because it's a growing crisis, and we're responsible for it, but we're not taking responsibility for that. Joe Cirincione, thank you very much.
Peter, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We'll talk to you again soon. Joe Cirincione, president of the Plowshares Fund. They're on the web, Plowshares, P-L-O-U-G-H, plowshares.org. You can share a podcast of this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. Journalist Robert Scheer joins me next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at the King of
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Scott McClellan gives Congress his take on the CIA leak case.
Only those who know the underlying truth can bring this to an end. Sadly, they remain silent.
The Mississippi River won't crest as high as expected.
All the levee breaks have really displaced a lot of water into farm fields, so instead of going up, the water has spread out.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The House Judiciary Committee revisited the CIA leak case today. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
The hearing had only one witness, but he was a doozy. Scott McClellan, who gave the administration line to reporters as White House press secretary, said a lot of that information was wrong on the Iraq War, interrogation of prisoners, and the CIA leak case.
I regret that I played a role, however unintentionally, in relaying false information to the public about it.
He said Vice President Cheney and Karl Rove should come before Congress and tell what they know, though expressed doubts they'd tell the truth. Republicans attacked McClellan's motives. Steve King of Iowa told him he shouldn't talk at all.
Could you not have taken some of this to the grave with you and done this country a favor?
McClellan said Washington could use more truth-telling. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Bush could have blocked McClellan's testimony by asserting executive privilege, but the White House said McClellan has already made so many public statements promoting his book that it didn't expect much new today. Now this.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
Buying a used car can be filled with pitfalls, but there's one sure way to avoid stumbling. Buy a Honda-certified used car. Only well-maintained late-model Hondas are eligible. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low 0.9% APR financing on all Pilot-certified used Honda models. Feeling a little more sure-footed, aren't we? Honda-certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
One man's misfortune is another man's gain. Because the Mississippi River has topped so many levees in Iowa, Illinois, and northern Missouri, some of the pressure has been relieved. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy reports the crest forecasts downstream were lowered today by about 3 feet.
Now they believe that the water's not going to get as high as they once thought, and that's because all the levee breaks have really displaced a lot of water into farm fields, so instead of going up, the water has spread out.
He's in the small town of Foley, Missouri.
There was significant flooding overnight in Foley. A lot of water came in after a levee broke, swamped a bunch of houses, but now the water seems to be slowing. It may not be receding quite yet, but it's not coming up as fast.
Winfield is hard hit. Missouri Governor Matt Blunt visited there today.
It is indeed devastating. There's been tens of thousands of acres of prime farmland that are underwater because of the flood. That's going to have a big impact on the local community's economy and the state's economy.
Congress and the Bush administration have finally reached a compromise on electronic surveillance of suspected foreign terrorists.
The enemy who attacked us on September the 11th is determined to strike this country again. It's vital that our intelligence community has the ability to learn who the terrorists are talking to, what they're saying, and what they're planning.
The bill passed the House today on a vote of more than 3-1. Ohio Democrat Dennis Kucinich was one of the no votes.
Let's remember when this country was founded, Benjamin Franklin said, those who would give up their essential liberties to achieve a measure of security deserve neither.
Among the provisions is immunity for telecommunications companies that cooperate with the government. It was an unmistakable message to Iran. Earlier this month, about 100 Israeli warplanes took part in an exercise that had them flying out 900 miles over the Mediterranean. CBS News consultant Michael Oren says it was practice for possible airstrikes on Iran's nuclear facilities.
Israeli planes to reach Iran would have to refuel at least three times going there and back, and they were training that.
Israel won't say what the exercise was about, but its ambassador to Washington, Salai Meridor, reportedly rules nothing out.
We cannot take this threat lightly, and as our prime minister just recently said, Israel will not tolerate a nuclear Iran.
Meridor says the time for diplomatic action is running out. The tension with Iran was one factor driving oil prices higher today. Oil settled in New York at $134.62 a barrel. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Who's excited for our big road trip?
I'm excited to hear you say bad words when we get lost again.
Now, son, Mommy got Daddy a Garmin Nuvi 780 for Father's Day. Nuvi 780 has preloaded maps, so Daddy will never get lost again. And Daddy got this neat subscription to MSN Direct so we can avoid traffic delays, get local weather, and gas prices.
Will you honk the horn with your head again?
It's a new day, son. It's a Garmin Nuvi day.
To receive MSN Direct content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, live from San Francisco. And in so many cases for our weekend listeners in Missoula, Montana, Seattle, and Portland, we're not actually live. But you can send me an email with your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. Coming up next hour, Brad Friedman joins us as usual, and I want to thank Brad for sitting in for me last week when I was away on kind of a vacation, and we'll be talking about a lot of election issues, including the fate of one Bradley Schlotzman. His name surfaced in the U.S. attorney scandal over the last year or so, and he made the news at Brad Blog this week. We'll tell you about that. Coming up next hour here on the PBC show. Right now, my nephew Liam is working the phones and is feverishly dialing to connect with writer Robert Scheer. Bob Scheer is a longtime friend of the Peter B. Collins Show. He is a journalist of decades. We try not to give you an actual number because he's much younger than he seems. I mean, he seems much younger than he is. And he has been a columnist first for the Los Angeles Times. It's now distributed by the San Francisco Chronicle. That's a weekly column. He is the co-founder of TruthDig.com, which is a great progressive news website that has been up for, about 2 years now. He is a professor of journalism at the Annenberg School at the University of Southern California. And his newest book is called The Pornography of Power, How Defense Hawks Hijacked 9/11 and Weakened America. And Liam, how are we doing over there and getting connected to Robert Scheer? Go ahead and tell me. I'm not hearing a thing. Are you reaching him? I see. He's getting connected to the hotel, but not reaching the guests. He just found a human at a hotel in Seattle. So Robert Scheer's new book is a powerful look at the military-industrial complex, and he repeatedly invokes the words of Dwight Eisenhower as he was leaving office in 1960 with his very important message to Americans about the military-industrial complex. And we have Robert Scheer now. Thank you, Liam. Good work there. We're training.
Here.
We're training the next generation of talk radio professionals.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, and you're in Seattle.
Yes, yes, speaking here and doing all that. I'm on a book tour.
All right. Well,
and this is actually, you know, where Boeing is so strong, so...
well, that's one of the things I want to talk with you about.
The enemy camp here.
Now, first up, this program that we're doing right now will be airing in Seattle on Sunday night, so I don't know if that's after your event.
Oh, after. I'm speaking tonight is Friday.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And have you been to Portland yet?
Yep, was Portland last night at Powell's Bookstore. It was very nice.
Okay. Well, Portland listeners will hear this on Sunday as well.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And let's do a shout-out to Missoula, Montana. They're listening as well. Before we get to your new book, The Pornography of Power, let's talk about it, because in the book you describe this whole struggle over the next generation of fuel tankers for the Air Force. And frankly, I can't take sides on this because they both stink. We have the Boeing deal, and the senators from Washington State have successfully caused the General Accountability Office to issue a report saying that this has to be rebid, but they're frosted because a consortium that includes the Airbus manufacturers, the Europeans, actually won this contract.
Yeah.
Is there an honest side to this debate, Bob?
Well, this is why you have to buy the book, Pornography of Power, because I have a whole chapter on it. And the first thing, it all started as a swindle. It was always a swindle. Boeing was in trouble because commercial air sales were down from selling planes after 9/11. And so some of the folks there and their friends in Congress hit on the idea of leasing Boeing commercial planes, converting them to mid-air fuel tankers. And if you read the New York Times stories, bizarre how these things are reported. The New York Times had a story and said, well, this is originally going to be a $30, $40 billion contract, but it's expected to grow to $100 billion. You're talking about a massive program. Now, in my book, I got a chapter on this because it's an example of the incredible waste that has nothing to do with fighting the war on terror and everything to do with making profit. So this was a thing as John McCain went to town against this deal. He got the emails and everything, and he exposed it that this was stuck into an appropriations bill without any hearings, without any oversight whatsoever. And Warner, the head of the committee, also was very down on it, and they raised all these questions. And as a result of the diligence of John McCain's staff, the chief financial officer of Boeing and the top procurement officer in the Air Force went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO of Boeing resigned.
Yeah.
And that was over a deal to lease these planes, okay? So that fell apart, and it was, you know, incredible scandal. And then they come up with this idea, well, let's build some new ones, you know? And if you look at the New York Times story, what I find so bizarre about it, there's a picture of one of these tankers refueling a B-2 bomber, stealth bomber. That plane itself is a joke, okay? Why do you need to refuel B-2 stealth bombers, and what are they doing flying around up there? They were initially developed as part of the triad of America's nuclear force. And the whole scenario was we had these land-based missiles and they were the deterrent. But if the Soviets fired and we fired back, right, then we also had the missiles on the ships, and they fired back. And if all that failed to destroy all vestiges of life in the former Soviet Union, then we had these bombers up there in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they could penetrate Soviet air defense, not that it would exist anymore, and then they could kill anything else that lived.
Right.
You know? And so why do you need these planes? You don't need them, let alone why do you have to refuel them, and why do they have to be on constant alert? Why do they have to be circling? Why can't they land and get refueled? You know, so those questions aren't even raised.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine if you try to spend $100 billion to fix the levees or rebuild New Orleans or educate kids or, you know, help people with their subprime mortgage scandal. Well, everybody would put that under a microscope. You know, are you wasting money? Why are you using this? Why this amount? It'll bankrupt us. But you want to spend $100 billion on these air tankers for mid-flight fueling, and no one questions it. And so now the only reason it's become news is because Boeing had a competitor. They got back in the game. They said, okay, you won't lease planes, we'll build a new one. And they thought they could run away with the contract instead of Airbus and its American partner. And it's actually going to be built in Alabama, among other places. So the senators from Alabama are very much in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they spread that pork around, don't
yeah.
they?
Well, Eisenhower warned, that's what my book's all about. Eisenhower warned that the military-industrial complex has its tentacles in every district. And it's totally bipartisan, the support for this pork. Both of our candidates now are in favor of increasing military spending, both the Democrat and Republican. And it's the elephant in the room. And the reason I think it's important to get into is if you look at what's called the discretionary part of the federal budget, you know, that means you take out Social Security, you take out Medicare and those big and child programs because no one's going to touch them and you're not going to raise taxes. So you look at what's left and that's called discretionary part of the budget. And almost 60% of that, six out of every $10 goes to the military. So you're not going to do anything about, you know, making this a better place to live or making our kids better educated or anything if you don't cut the military programs. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican. And then the other thing is, you know, you don't make these weapons, and we're spending more than the rest of the world combined. We're spending more in real dollars than we have at any time since World War II,
right.
Without an enemy in sight, more than we did during the Korean War, more than we did during the Vietnam War. And it's absurd. What has it got to do with trying to defeat an enemy called terrorism where they you know, their whole arsenal you can buy at Home Depot.
Yeah.
You know, box cutters and pen knives, right?
Right.
And,
uh-huh.
And so, yeah, we're going to build these totems, these huge, you know, usually complex, expensive weapons, to, you know, submarines and so forth, new Virginia-class submarines and all these things, to defeat an enemy that doesn't even have a rowboat, you know? So it's a big hoax. And then they invoke China or something, which is another fraud, you know, because here's China carrying our debt, which we're running up to build weapons, to combat weapons the Chinese don't have, you know, and they're laughing up their sleeve at us. So it's a grotesque expenditure and waste of the public treasury, which prevents you from solving your real problems. But the other side of it is you don't build weapons and have a big military-industrial complex without having a constituency for war. And that's why we get into wars. That's how we got into Iraq. You know, Rumsfeld said we didn't have any good targets in Afghanistan, so we had to find a place where they had some good targets and had at least a semblance of a modern army, which they really didn't have. And then you can do shock and awe, and you can justify these weapon systems. And then even there, you can't justify them, like the F-22, one of the big boondoggles, you know, $65 billion program. You can't justify because it hasn't even flown a mission in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Well,
so there you are.
And the support for this is, you know, it shows how addicted to pork our political leaders are. And let's now talk just for fairness and balance here about Senator Barbara Boxer, one of the most liberal members of the Senate, somebody who I look to as a leader on a lot of issues, including trying to reduce the Pentagon budget long term. And yet she's a champion of the C-17 Globemaster III.
Yeah, the cargo plane that the Pentagon doesn't want. It keeps trying to mothball. You know, and I was at a dinner, actually, with Barbara Boxer, you know, and she was saying, "Here, you got a new book out." I said, "Yeah, you know, you don't come out looking so good." You know, because, I mean, the fact is, you know, McCain does look better in my book than Barbara Boxer, for example, because McCain at least opposed a couple of weapon systems. You know, unfortunately, he supports the Iraq War, which then is the excuse for wasting a lot of money. But, you know, at least he had some sense about something. And here's Boxer. Why does she want that plane? Not because it does anything. I mean, what is it? What do you need it for? A very sophisticated cargo plane, when in fact 90% of what you see, even if you believe in the Iraq War, 90% of what you see sending over there goes by ship. It costs a very small percentage of what it does to fly stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And then even when you send stuff by air, you can send it by UPS or FedEx, or you got your other cargo ships. You don't really need this plane in any sense. She's for it, not because it's useful for anything, but it's a jobs program in Long Beach, yeah, California. And everybody's for it. Schwarzenegger's for it. You know, the right-wing congressmen are for it. Rohrbach mm-hmm. is for it. You know, the yeah. liberal ones are for it. You know, and that's the disease that Eisenhower warned us against. And what is appalling to me is that no one's noticing it.
The book is Pornography of Power. Robert Scheer is with us this entire hour. If you have a question or comment, get on the line now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security, investment, white picket fences. Did you know that real estate is the single most sought after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday. Checking traffic on KRXA and just a mess in Santa Cruz County right now. Highway 1 in both directions near Buena Vista Drive shut down. Up to 500 acres of a grass fire burning out there. Southbound 1 shut down, closed at Freedom Boulevard. Northbound 1's been shut down at Airport Off-Ramp in Watsonville. Evacuations underway for Buena Vista, Larkin Valley, and Calabasas Road. And the Watsonville Airport itself has been shut down due to heavy smoke. Avoid Highway 1 through Santa Cruz County right now at all costs. South 101, you have heavy traffic Cochrane Road down to about Dunn Avenue in Morgan Hill. For Poondale, northbound 101 after Echo Valley Road, we have a stall that's blocking the second lane from the left. Also, Salinas, Davis Road to Blanco Road, a three-car minor injury crash reported. Unknown lane information on that. And the southbound 1 connector ramp to eastbound 68 in Monterey, a grass fire burning near the roadway spreading up the hillside. They may shut that ramp down. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. Nate Nix, Traffic, KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Robert Scheer is a columnist, a journalism professor, the author of this new book called Pornography of Power. And in his spare time, he is one of the hosts of public radio's Left, Right, and Center. And, Bob, I talked to Arianna Huffington a couple of weeks ago in Minneapolis. I've just never been able to figure out which one of you is left and which one is center.
Well, she used to be the right.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. That's when she was married.
But I have a lot of respect for Arianna, and you know, she just, as they say on the show, she floats above the categories. She's a free spirit, and I wouldn't peg her, but.
And who's the right guy right now?
Tony Blankley. He's the editor of the Washington Times. He's great.
Newt Gingrich is press secretary.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich, and Matt Miller is the moderate. And by the way, I have this website called TruthDig.com.
That's right. We mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
We're joined by John from Carmel Valley. Hi, John. You're on with Bob Scheer.
I'd like to ask Robert Scheer what he thinks of the vote just recently in Congress, another caving in to Bush on the FISA bill.
Oh, I think the whole package there was horrible, and also the passage of $162 billion more for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
More than he asked for, than he asked for.
How come they're caving in like this? This isn't the first time. It's a train of these events.
Yeah, well, they're chicken. You know, it's a weird thing. The Republicans can get it wrong every time. The hawks, even the conservative Democrats, they get it wrong every time, but they have no lessening of confidence. They think they're as American as apple pie. They think they got the public with them, even though the polls show they're in the toilet. And these Democrats, the more progressive Democrats, cave all the time because they think they're out of sync with the American people. The American people gave them the majority because they wanted them to cut this crap out. And instead, they're playing the same game. I think it's self-defeating. I really do. You know,
I think it's insane. I think they ought to be all of them ought to be sent men in white coats.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. You're really raising one of the fundamental questions about modern American politics. Why are the more progressive politicians so cowardly? Why do they collapse? They're not comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
Now, there are some exceptions. You know, I think Ted Kennedy's an exception. But in the main, the leaders of the Democratic Party just act as if, hey, you know, we're not going to let the public in on what we really think, because then they'll reject us, you know. And the fact is, then the public tags them as being ineffectual or opportunist, and they lose support.
In the debate before the FISA vote today, it was interesting, Bob, because Dennis Kucinich spoke shortly before Nancy Pelosi went up to present what I thought were false choices and a set of excuses for why she was going to vote for this bad bill. And Kucinich he remains, in my book, one of the most courageous people and most dedicated to the Constitution. And his recent introductions of the Articles of Impeachment is just another example of that.
Yeah, there's a great piece on Truthdig that Gore Vidal did, paying tribute to Dennis on that very issue and dealing with it. Yeah, but, you know, Dennis has been marginalized, and you know, they say, oh, well, that's Dennis, you know. And, you know, the conventional wisdom is that, you know, don't tell the public what you really believe to be true because they'll reject you. And I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm with your caller on that way. I just don't get it. I mean, these people were put in there to protect our individual freedoms, to make sure we weren't being harassed by the government, to end this war, and they're not doing it. And then yet, you know, they say, well, give us more time, we'll win the next election, then we'll really do something. I'm worried about them.
Yeah, me too. And this whole thing of impeachment being off the table is the reason why the Democrats are weakened time after time, because they don't hold them accountable for the last round, and today they gave away amnesty, is what I call it,
yeah,
on the illegal wiretapping.
Yeah,
amnesty for the government officials and the phone companies.
Yeah, that one drives me nuts, because my phone company, right, which I'm paying money to, says it betrayed my privacy, betrayed my rights, and now they can lobby the government, which is what they did. They poured in a lot of money there, and they can lobby the Congress to get them off the hook. So they aren't accountable to me. I can't even get my day in court to sue them to say, you broke our contract. You
right.
betrayed me
yeah.
as a consumer.
And speaker after speaker in the House said, oh, this was a response to 9/11, Bob, and we know that the request for wiretaps started in February and March of 2001. We'll never know the reason why. We got to take a break. We'll continue. Robert Scheer's new book, The Pornography of Power. Your calls are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
What gives those rumors legs? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The Obama campaign is worried about those internet rumors that he's a closet Muslim with a hidden agenda. Seems silly with all the press his Christian pastor got, so I put out a call for people who actually believe the rumors that Barack Obama is Muslim.
If he's not, I believe that he will become, you know, once he's elected.
That's Tom from Owala, Washington.
I've been going through scripture for almost 40 years, and I believe that we're living very close to the end of the age.
9/11 convinced Tom of that, and he thinks Barack Obama is the leader forecast in Revelations.
Obama's going to bring change, all right, and we're going to like it for a while, but it's going to have a bite.
And this is all being managed by God?
God allows stuff to happen. God allows hurricanes, and God's got to do something or allow something to get our attention.
Tom says the problem is that 80% of Americans still do not truly accept Jesus Christ. So I asked him this. If an opinion poll determined that we had increased the number of Christians in this country by, let's say, 10%, you think that would do it?
Oh, boy. Well, I, wow. Wow.
I mean, that would be real.
Worth the effort. I think it'd be worth the effort, Dave.
You think God would relent?
That would, oh, I don't know. One part of me said, bring it on. Another part just scares the liver out of me.
Well, I have to say, I agree with him on that last part. Now this.
In 15 minutes, you could spend a fortune at the gas pump. You could make yourself sick on beef jerky. You could probably adopt way too many cats. Or, in 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to Geico. There are plenty of ways to save. Discounts for being a good driver, multi-car discounts. You could save 15% or more. But if you enjoy spending your 15 minutes with way too many cats, by all means, who might they judge?
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Hi,
I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras, whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with journalist Robert Scheer. My toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B. Robert Scheer is a journalism professor at the University of Southern California, a syndicated columnist now based out of the San Francisco Chronicle, but for many years at the Los Angeles Times, co-founder of TruthDig.com, and two recent books I'll mention. Playing President is a recap of his interviews with Nixon, Carter, Bush, Reagan, Clinton. And that was Bush 1, not George W. Bush. And he references the Nixon interview in his new book, The Pornography of Power, subtitled How Defense Hawks Hijacked 9/11 and Weakened America. Tell us about your post-presidential interlude with Richard Nixon and why it informed your analysis in this new book, Bob.
Well, you know, the neoconservatives who gifted us with the whole reaction to 9/11 and all the whole empire, the Project for New American Century, they didn't just pop out of nowhere. They really came out of a struggle launched by Richard Nixon when he started or endorsed détente and when he made the opening to China. And the key players here were basically working for Scoop Jackson, Henry mm-hmm. Jackson, the senator from the state of Washington, who was also known as the senator from Boeing.
Correct.
And Richard Perle was on his staff, and so was
Wolfowitz. Uh-huh.
And, this argument goes back a long way. Are we trying to build a Pax Americana in which America is the dominant power in the world, kind of an old-fashioned imperialist model where we control everything, we're the world's cop, we control the resources and everything? Or, you know, do we live in a complex world in which we have to engage all these different people, in which we don't call all the shots? And Nixon, even though he's got this reputation of being the fearsome, you know, Cold Warrior, in fact, was very early to recognize that. And he made the opening to China. He endorsed détente with the Soviets. And that's really when the Cold War started to come unglued. And so these people were attacking Nixon back then, saying, you know, he's underestimating the threat and the danger and everything else. And they really were going nowhere fast. In 92, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, George Bush's father, the first President Bush, gave a speech in which he said the Cold War is over, the Soviet Union is dead, I'm going to order my Secretary of Defense to cut military spending by 30%.
That would have been Dick Cheney.
That was Dick Cheney. And we have no need for these things in that way. And we're going to start paying back the American people so that we can use this money for needed domestic programs. The American people have suffered. We'll cut their tax a little bit and so forth. That was the promise of Bush's father. And he actually delivered on quite a bit of it, making those cuts. And then Clinton came in. He was a little bit more timid, as Democrats tend to be. They're afraid of being called, you know, weak on defense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there was really no reason to keep up these war toys, these very expensive things, when there's no enemy in sight, and they were designed to defeat systems that the Soviets never got around to building. So, you know, radars and fighters and everything that they never built. So you got these things on the shelf, and you know no one wants to fund them anymore, and the military-industrial complex is all panicked, and then you have 9/11. And in, you know, whatever you think about 9/11, it was, you know, an asymmetrical example of an asymmetrical war in which your enemy is not using the conventional military arsenal. In fact, the only what they do is, of course, grab one of your a couple of your civilian planes and crash them into these buildings, and suddenly you've got this terrible act of war. But the fact is, they're not doing it with, you know, ICBMs and stealth fighters and everything else. And so instead of responding to that threat, George W. Bush, you know, sees this as a great opportunity to rev up the military expenditures. And the statistics are staggering. I don't know, I can repeat them over and over. No one's eyes glaze over. But, I mean, the idea that we're spending more than the rest of the world combined, that, you know, we're spending more than any time during war. I mean, doesn't that mean anything to anybody, you know? I don't care whether Barack Obama, I do care, I'd like to see Barack Obama win, you know, but I don't think he's going to be able to do very much about these domestic programs any more than McCain, because where's the money going to come from?
So as you look at this long term, do we have chronic war profiteering that is fed by incumbent politicians who benefit from the spending in their districts? Or do we have a case here of just looking for any excuse to maintain and expand our military using the so-called war on terror as a substitute for the Cold War?
Well, they're the same thing, really. I mean, you got all these different forces operating. You got the individual members of Congress who do want the money for their district. I don't care whether it's Hillary Clinton, who would be bragging about every weapon that she could bring to New York, or you got Lieberman, who wants those two, you know, Virginia-class subs rolling off the assembly line in Connecticut every year, you know, a $75 billion boondoggle.
And just let me pause there for a second about the submarines. What enemy are we defending against with nuclear submarines?
That's very interesting, because they can't, you know, I mean, I break out laughing, because, you know, you cannot go after Al-Qaeda with submarines, obviously. You know, they're holed up in some cave somewhere, you know, and they don't have, you know, rowboats, so what are you going to do with your subs? And so what Lieberman would say in his speech, and I quote him in the book, oh, it's China. Suddenly it's not terrorists, it's China.
Mm-hmm.
And the China thing is a joke, because, first of all, I mean, China, we know, and I quote this in the book from the Defense Department, the latest evaluation of the Chinese threat, based on all our intelligence data, they said China isn't even going to be a mid-level regional power until the next decade, and their aim is Taiwan. Now, what has happened in the last couple of weeks is that the relations between Taiwan and the mainland have become very cozy. You know, the head of the ruling party in Taiwan, the Kuomintang, that had fled the mainland, he just made his first visit ever since 1949 to China. The new leader of Taiwan got elected on the basis of getting along better with the mainland. And they've now said they're not going to have any kind of hostilities between them. They're going to have direct flights. They're going to have expanded tourism. And Taiwan is already the second biggest investor in mainland China. They're not going to go to war with each other. But anyway, it has nothing to do with these high-tech weapons that we're building, because the Chinese focuses on that regional conflict. And so we're in this ludicrous position where we're going deeply into debt. The Chinese lend us the money, we pay them the interest, then we take the money to build weapons, to combat weapons that the Chinese are not going to build.
Robert Scheer with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Bob, one of the things that alarmed me most about some of what I consider to be desperate moves in the late stages of Hillary Clinton's primary campaign was when she tried to move to the right of John McCain on Iran. And to be fair to her, some of these were hypothetical questions that she responded to. But one was, well, what if Iran launched a nuclear weapon against Israel? And she used the term obliterate. And then the next day, in a follow-up interview, she expanded on that a little bit and offered admiring comments about the Cold War. And she didn't explicitly refer to mutual assured destruction, but she was talking about the balance of terror that occurred during the Cold War when these two nuclear arsenals were facing off. And she seemed to hope for a situation like that in the Middle East. And I found that very alarming, and there was, you know, almost no comment on it.
Well, what I found even more alarming was that the Hillary Clinton supporters, my friends and people I know and everything, weren't appalled by that statement. And other sort of Thatcher-like moves that she was making about commander-in-chief and being tough and, you know, the call you get at 3 in the morning and all that, you know, macho talk. People said, well, she has to do it. You know, she's a woman candidate. Well, I thought the whole reason to try to have women in leadership is they'd be more reasonable, you know, more sensible, you know, care more about life. I mean, that's what was the hope. And obviously Condoleezza Rice has disproved that one. But, you know, Hillary was being very hawkish there, and she's got terrible advisors, or has. She's not running anymore. But, you know, who are really the neoliberals that I describe in my book, the people who cheered us on to the war in Iraq. And but I'm also worried about, you know, so that whole language. Well, look what's happened to this whole question of weapons of mass destruction. We went to war against a government that didn't happen, but we trivialized the issue. You know, we now say it's poison gas, it's biological, it's everything. And so it trivialized, really, the incredible danger of nuclear weapons. And then we took our eye off what was happening in Pakistan and AQ Khan, which is where the real proliferation came from.
Yep.
And we cozied up to them and let this guy off the hook and did not pursue their program. And now we've picked a fight with Putin over, anti-ballistic missile defense. We know that's a red herring. We know that they're going to respond. And, you know, we're putting them on their border, and that's only going to rev up the arms race between us and Russia. What's the percentage of that? I can't imagine anything positive coming out of that. And so, actually, we've totally ignored the whole question of nuclear proliferation and how to deal with it, and the situation has gotten much worse. We know that. And North Korea has now entered the select group, and we don't know what's happening with Iran, and this administration has no leverage over Iran because we need Iran to stay cool or Iraq falls apart because their surrogates are in power in Iraq thanks to us, and their power extends, you know, from Lebanon to right through the Gaza to Iraq. So we have made the Iranian Ayatollahs the most important players in the Middle East right now, and so we can't really do anything very aggressive about stopping their nuclear program. They have all the leverage, and it's absolutely bizarre situation. And the name of fighting, the name of alarm about terrorists getting WMD, we have actually vastly increased the possibility that terrorists will get WMD.
And Bob, I want to take a moment here to read a passage from your book, because the way I do it, I bend back corners, and I bent back all four corners on this part of your book, and you referenced it a moment ago. So it came to pass that the subject of nuclear bombs and the means to deliver them was transformed from what was once a seriously considered and central concern of U.S. national security policy to a giddy propaganda sideshow of alarmist sound bites. The warning by Condoleezza Rice about a mushroom cloud and the president's sight of phony enriched uranium sales from Niger to Iraq were all intended not to confront the serious problem of nuclear proliferation to terrorists and rogue nations, but to justify invading a country that had completely ended its WMD programs. And you tag that comment with an excerpt from a Tom Friedman Six More Months column where he says, the real reason for this war, which was never stated, was that after 9/11, America needed to hit someone in the Arab Muslim world. Afghanistan wasn't enough because a terrorism bubble had built up over there, a bubble that posed a real threat to the open societies of the West, needed to be punctured. And he goes on to say that we did it because we could.
Yeah, I mean, Friedman is an incredibly irresponsible columnist, but because he has a certain style and he's in the New York Times, he has all this great credibility, so he can be wrong over and over again. But, you know, somehow he has the he's acceptable. And, you know, I'm very irritated with the New York Times right now because they made a decision in their book section not to review my book. Now,
really?
One thing if they had, you know, panned it, you know, fine. That's their right. But, you know, the idea that there's this one book out there that's dealing with the military buildup, the only one, and the idea that they don't have a responsibility to engage the arguments there, and I think in part it's because, you know, I've taken them on in the past. I took them on the Weinhold East scandal, you know, the putting this guy in solitary for 9 months thanks to the goading of the New York Times. And,
yes, the Los Alamos guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and in this book I take them on again. But, you know, I think I do it in a serious way. It's not petty or personal, and I think I'm right. And, you know, they're basically like the rest of the people in power in America. That's why I call it the pornography of power. They're not accountable, and they're not dealing with the real thing. They're performing a lap dance, you know, and making money off it, but it's got nothing to do with what you came in for, you know, which was supposed to be security.
Well, and the dollar ain't worth what it used to be. It's hard to buy those lap dances. We're going to take a break. Robert Scheer's new book, Pornography of Power. It's out in hardcover, and I recommend it. It's a stunning analysis of the military-industrial media complex. 888-5, Peter B., if you'd like to weigh in, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday. Checking traffic on KRXA and just a mess in Santa Cruz County right now. Highway 1 in both directions near Buena Vista Drive shut down. Up to 500 acres of a grass fire burning out there. Southbound 1 shut down. Closed at Freedom Boulevard. Northbound 1's been shut down at Airport Off-Ramp in Watsonville. Evacuations underway for Buena Vista, Larkin Valley, and Calabasas Road. And the Watsonville Airport itself has been shut down due to heavy smoke. Avoid Highway 1 through Santa Cruz County right now at all costs. South 101, you have heavy traffic Cochran Road down to about Dunn Avenue in Morgan Hill. For Poondale, northbound 101 after Echo Valley Road, we have a stall that's blocking the second lane from the left. Also, Salinas, Davis Road to Blanco Road, a three-car minor injury crash reported, unknown lane information on that. And the southbound 1 connector ramp to eastbound 68 in Monterey, a grass fire burning near the roadway spreading up the hillside. They may shut that ramp down. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. Nate Nix, Traffic, KRXA.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues 9 minutes in front of the hour. Brad Friedman will join us next hour, our election protection advocate. from bradblog.com. We continue with journalist Robert Scheer. One more plug for truthdig.com, a great website, a lot of good information there. Just one of the people who writes for you is Chris Hedges, who was on our program the other day.
And Brad, too. You know, we run him.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff at TruthDig. Bob, in Pornography of Power, you articulated a line of thinking that is different from many progressives, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about it. Many people assume and they make linkages between the interests of the nation of Israel and the interests of the neocons, and they use AIPAC and other points of connection, if you will, to build a case that the U.S. went into Iraq in part in the interests of Israel. And they also build on that to suggest that the U.S. Is rattling sabers toward Iran, often as some sort of a proxy for Israel. And you don't buy that, and I'd like you to take a minute here to explain.
Well, I'll tell you, right now, the neocons aren't very happy with Israel because the Israeli government is pursuing peaceful talks, trying to, with Syria, with Hezbollah, and with Hamas. Truce with Hamas. And that goes against the whole belligerence that the Project for the New American Century was all about. Remember, these mm-hmm. guys actually wrote a paper for Netanyahu, for the right wing of
mm-hmm.
Israel.
Right.
And they actually believe in, you know, this strong fist, a permanent war. You know, these guys are ex-Trotskyists, if you know anything about leftist history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Trotsky believed the revolution was betrayed, and you got to have permanent revolution. You got to, you know, crack eggs to make an omelet, you know, and you got to have permanent turmoil. And they moved over to the right with that message. You know, many of them started out on the left, particularly their fathers and their, you know, their ideological heirs. And so I think the value of Israel is only when Israel was perceived as a militarist force and a strength in the Cold War, pro-U.S. and all that kind of stuff in a very belligerent, hawkish way. But to the degree that Israel moves to an emphasis on diplomacy and getting along with its neighbors and so forth, which it has to do for its survival, and to the degree that that American presidents were participant in that process, Israel becomes far less attractive to these hawks. And, you know, one of the ironies I point out in my book is there, on the one hand, they say they're going after these Islamo-fascists with these big weapons. On the other hand, they invoke China as the great threat. And Israel is an arms supplier to China. You know,
mm-hmm.
the Harpy, the drone, you know, that China got from Israel, and the Defense Department even complains about it. And so, you know, the world is complex out there. But my main thing is, with friends like the neocons, Israel doesn't need enemies. Objectively speaking, these people have put Israel in a very weak position. They have strengthened Iran by their invasion of Iraq. They have created great turmoil in the Mideast. They short-circuited the peace process. And what I tried to show in the book is that, in fact, the polling data that even the Meerschaum book cites from the American Jewish Committee and others, the polling data shows that 80% of American Jews don't accept the neocon politics. They don't vote that way. They don't agree with it. And so these people don't speak for American Jews, and I don't think they're particularly focused on Israel. One of the sort of revelations in my book is Wolfowitz's doctoral dissertation was an attack on Israel. Because Israel was at that time threatening to develop some nuclear technology that could be turned through a bomb, and he was opposed to it.
You also reference his Muslim girlfriend who got him into trouble at the World Bank.
Right, and I'm not being petty there. I mean, he can have any girlfriend he wants, but my point was, you know, if you're really an observant Jew, you're supposed to have a Jewish wife, and you're supposed to stick with the one you have, you know. And here, the main influence on him was not some Israeli Jewess, but rather, yes, a Muslim woman.
Mm-hmm. So Bob, yes. We have about 2 minutes remaining here.
Yeah.
Do you see a path forward that produces a real peace dividend, that returns rationality to our foreign policy,
right,
and that puts some limits on the, you know, the free spending era that we've seen at the Pentagon?
Well, I think it's an absolute necessity. And as I said before, it's the elephant in the room. And I didn't write this book for giggles here, you know. I think if progressives don't focus on the military budget and try to figure out how we can have a peacetime economy, then we're not going anywhere here. And we're going to have other wars because you don't build these weapons without finding excuses to use them. And my answer to the Barbara Boxers is, look, I don't want to hurt jobs in Long Beach. Pay those people to go study something. To build something else, you know. I'm not for cutting jobs, but, you know, we can take the resources that we're wasting on the military and we can create jobs in the peaceful sector. And during the election, there were very few people. Dennis Kucinich was one of the rare voices that was willing to talk about that, and unfortunately, his voice is not present now. So I would say progressives ought to demand from the Democratic Party some, you know, where's your peace plank? Instead, what did we get from the Democratic National Committee just this week? They attacked John McCain for one of the good things John McCain did was going after Boeing on that tanker deal.
Mm-hmm.
They attacked him. The DNC attacked him. You know, do you give money to the DNC or do they speak for us? I don't know. But I didn't want to attack McCain for one of the good things that he did.
Yeah.
You know, didn't want to waste our money on that stupid tanker deal and hear the Democrats say, well, you cost jobs and everything. What they're really saying is they don't think we can have a successful peacetime economy. They don't believe it. They don't think the money will be allocated. So let's grab the jobs where we can. That's what a lot of people at the universities are doing now. You know, Eisenhower pointed out the danger to university life of this military spending. Go around these campuses now and see how much money is coming in from the war on terror, the Defense Department. How many kids are going to school now because they're hooked up with the military in some way? How many kids go off to Iraq and then come back to pay their dues?
Mm-hmm.
And the military influence on the campuses now is very large. And it's just the thing that Eisenhower warned against very explicitly.
Bob, great to spend the hour with you. Thanks for a great new book.
Thank you.
Pornography of Power, Robert Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R. And go ahead and visit truthdig.com. He'll be much obliged. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show podcast available. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. This program produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Liam Thomas Murphy Burke is taking your calls today.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The Mississippi River has flooded hundreds of homes and miles of farmland, but there's good news for people downstream. Forecasters now say the river will crest 3 feet lower than expected because all the water spilling over levees has taken the pressure off. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy has today's story in Foley, Missouri.
Bobby James Jr.'s yard used to overlook a sod farm, but thanks to floodwaters that traveled more than 2 miles to swamp his neighborhood, he now has lakefront property.
Did you ever think you'd be able to go for a boat ride in your backyard?
No, I went from golf course to lakefront.
The water here in Foley is supposed to go up about another foot before dropping this weekend. That means the water right where we're standing would be above my waist. But there is some good news. They feel like they're really getting a handle on the floods here in this area. They've even gone as far to suspend all those sandbagging efforts that have been taking place for the last couple of days.
Southern California is bracing for triple-digit temperatures to continue through the weekend. An ice sculptor in Inglewood has been forced to buy dry ice to keep his creations from melting during delivery. The former White House spokesman, whose book makes serious charges about the Bush administration, went before the House Judiciary Committee today.
Scott McClellan, who spoke for President Bush as his press secretary, told Congress the White House misled the American people about the war in Iraq, and he was told to lie about the CIA leak case. Republicans assailed McClellan's character and motives. He was asked why he included in his book a report President Bush used cocaine as a young man, and said the point was Mr. Bush's denial of it was part of a pattern.
The point I make is that he couldn't recall it, or at least he said he couldn't recall it, and I thought, how can that be?
McClellan said he put his faith in the president and others in the administration, and it was misplaced. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Israel isn't saying why it conducted a large-scale military exercise over the Mediterranean, but CBS News correspondent David Martin says it's widely seen as a rehearsal for airstrikes on Iran.
About 100 aircraft were involved, and they flew ranges of more than 800 miles, which are the ranges that would be required if they were to conduct strikes against the Iranian nuclear program.
The Israeli ambassador to Washington says the time for diplomatic solutions is running out, and his country has made it clear it will not tolerate a nuclear Iran. The Dow dropped 220 points today, closing below 12,000 for the first time since mid-March. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus says the market reacted to a spate of bad news.
There's word that Standard & Poor's may cut its credit rating on GM, Ford, and Chrysler because of these high fuel prices. We also have word that technology stocks may be taking a hit with earnings season right around the corner, because there are predictions that we're not only going to see a slowdown in technology here in this country, but overseas as well.
The technology-heavy NASDAQ dropped 55 points to 2406. This is CBS News.
Linda, please, could you make some more copy paper up here?
Up here? Just look on the shelf over the copier.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Linda, my phone's broken. Can you cast some sort of spell to fix it?
It was just unplugged.
Oh, my gosh, you're a wizard.
Hey, Linda, can you work your magic on this paper jam?
Can you help me win this lottery scratch-off game?
Okay.
Linda, my cat's sick. Can you heal her?
I am an office manager. All I did was take our empty HP-compatible ink cartridges...
And you turned them into money. We know.
Yeah.
No. I took them to Staples and got $15 back in rewards.
She went to Staples and they paid her rewards. Now that's power.
It's not magic. Just recycle your Office Depot, Office Max, or other store brand HP compatible ink or toner cartridges at Staples. Purchase $25 of HP original cartridges and get $15 back in Staples rewards. Not a rewards member? Join today. It's free. Staples. That was easy. Limit 2 recycled cartridges per rewards account. Limited time offer valid in U.S. stores only.
Lots of Americans are cutting back on discretionary spending, and that's really hurt the people who work for tips.
You could call it the bartender's blues.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got.
It takes all those tips.
The tips are definitely the lion's share of any bartender's income.
David Craver, president, National Bartenders Association.
There are less people are actually going out to restaurants, so there's less traffic in the restaurants, and the people that are in there are actually tipping a little less. So combined, it's definitely put a crimp on things.
He says $5 tippers are now $2 or $3 tippers. He blames patrons' miserly ways on the high cost of gas. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
In New York City, a group called Transportation Alternatives calculates the drivers circling the block looking for a parking space burn $130,000 worth of gas in a year. They also burn 50,000 hours of their precious time. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy 3 Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the 4th free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
Buying a used car can be filled with pitfalls, but there's one sure way to avoid stumbling. Buy a Honda-certified used car. Only well-maintained late-model Hondas are eligible. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low 0.9% APR financing on all Pilot-certified used Honda models. Feeling a little more sure-footed, aren't we? Honda-certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Politically, I feel a wave of melancholy today. Shaking my head saying, why do the Democrats operate this way? Ooh la la. 7 minutes into the hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and per usual, Brad Friedman joins us, the proprietor, citizen journalist, chief cook, and bottle washer at bradblog.com, checking in from the Bradmobile today. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, and thank you for holding down the fort while I was away part of last week.
I had a great time. It was my pleasure and my honor, and I got to rant about habeas corpus all week, so no complaints.
Well, we'll certainly honor your habeas corpus rights if they ever need to be invoked.
I may need them at some point. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And what is your 20 at this hour? Where are you cruising?
Somewhere we are in central Oregon, somewhere on the coast. That's about all I know or all I'm allowed to disclose at this hour.
I see. And is your goal to get lost, and have you achieved it?
We have not yet achieved the getting lost. We hope to, although we may be blowing up through Portland first before getting entirely lost. If next week is, if we have any luck next week, we'll be lost entirely.
Okay, well, good. I hope you can check out and get a little time off the grid, because you're a pretty dedicated guy, and I can count probably on one hand the times that you've been off over the last 3 years that we've been talking every Friday.
That's true, although you wouldn't be the first one to tell me to get lost. So I'll take your advice if I can.
Well, I today would like to tell Nancy Pelosi to get lost, because when I saw her comments about why she was going to vote for the stinking FISA law, even though she said, I'm not asking anybody else to vote for this.
Yeah.
I mean, she acknowledged what a piece of doo-doo it is. And yet she advanced what I consider to be false choices, the preeminent one that, you know, we could not do nothing. And I frankly think that doing nothing was the best thing the House could have done related to domestic surveillance.
What's incredible here, actually, is that not only did they not do nothing, they did worse than nothing in many ways. They gave away, and the White House even acknowledged this, they got more than the White House even wanted. You may recall when they were doing when they were having this debate originally, there was a question of, well, do we either give immunity to the telephone companies, which, by the way, is not about protecting the telephone companies. It's about protecting George Bush.
Yep.
Because the telcos will turn over on Bush at that point. And that's why this is so important to Bush. But the choice was either grant immunity to the telephone companies, or allow the government to replace the telephone companies. In other words, if someone sues the telephone companies, the government would substitute themselves for the telephone companies. That was the other choice that the more, I guess we'll call them, conservative Democrats wanted. And now they've gone even further. They gave even more than the White House even wanted, which is to be able to go to a court, show that the administration had asked these telephone companies to do this illegal wiretapping, and if the administration asked them to do that, the case would be thrown out. So who the hell is negotiating for these Democrats? It's unbelievable.
Well, and Brad, the other option that I advanced and didn't have a chance to introduce in committee was the idea of limiting money damages that the phone companies might face, because I'm not really interested in significant penalties to them for cooperating with the government. What I want is full disclosure. I want to know the scope of this intelligence gathering domestically that was done outside the law. And I may sound like a broken record to people who've been listening to the whole show today, but I still maintain that what they swept under the rug today was any inkling of why the Bush administration asked for wiretaps domestically prior to 9/11. We heard Lamar Smith get up there on the House floor and once again repeat the lie that this domestic eavesdropping was a response to 9/11. The contacts with the phone companies started in February and March of 2001, and Mark Klein, the AT&T whistleblower here in San Francisco, has acknowledged that the switch was violated, if you will, prior to 9/11.
Now, I haven't gotten to look at the actual language of the new version yet, but I know there was talk at some point of only granting whatever immunity, whatever get-out-of-jail-free card they were giving away, only to wiretapping post-9/11. Do you know if this new language, this new compromise, which seems to have yet again been brokered by Steny Hoyer,
yeah,
and we can talk about that in a minute, but do you know if, in fact, even prior to 9/11, these guys are going to end up getting a get-out-of-jail-free card?
I don't know that. And I haven't seen that explicit language either way in the bill. So,
there was some hair splitting there originally when they were talking about it. Now, whether that has survived this process where Steny Hoyer just seems to be giving away the store, and we see this, Peter, now, time after time, bill after bill, where you've got to wonder who is really in charge here in the House for the Democrats. Is it Nancy Pelosi or is it Steny Hoyer? Because he seems to me to be running over her like a steamroller in just about every piece of legislation that comes up.
Hard to say, in terms of, whether he is in lockstep with the Speaker or not. I would suspect he is. And, from my knowledge of Nancy Pelosi, she's a very disciplined, she has a very disciplined political mind. And she's able to parse things in a way, that's cold and calculating, frankly. And as she gave her comments on the House floor Friday morning, I was struck by just the way she phrased it and how she talked about how our troops in the war zones need actionable intelligence. And I thought that was such a stretch, because to tap somebody's phone in San Diego and say that is to protect a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan, it simply doesn't make any sense to me. And then she offered what I consider to be this big false choice, saying that, well, we don't have an option to pass no bill. That's not true, because the FISA law is still in effect. The Protect America Act did expire at the end of February, but the underlying law remains there and offers a very easy route for the administration, Bush or whoever follows, to get the wiretap authority either in advance or retroactively. And so to make this case that we need this to protect our troops and that we had no choice but to pass a bill, I'm just incredibly disappointed in Pelosi.
Well, I understand that, and you should be, and maybe I'm, trying to find a bright spot here. You know, I had met with Nancy Pelosi at a private meeting just prior to, I think I've told you about this, just prior to the 06 election. And I was, frankly, rather impressed with her and her grasp. We were talking at the time about concerns about the election, the voting machines, and so forth. And I was impressed with her grasp of the issues, to be frank. So I was then disappointed when election reform bill came forward and, it allowed for touchscreen machines. It allowed for all the crap we've been trying to get rid of. But in that case, you had Steny Hoyer working on it, and he had worked on the original Help America Vote Act. So I sort of gave her the benefit of the doubt, said, well, Hoyer is somewhat protecting his original bill and so forth. But I've seen this pattern time and time again now where Hoyer seems to be brokering things, and Pelosi, in a sense, is almost apologizing for him. It was rather unusual for her to come out and say, look, you don't have to vote with me.
Yeah.
It was as if she was saying, she herself was not crazy about this bill. And you're right, as far as not passing anything, That certainly is an option. That was would have been an option, by the way, for the last 6 years when Democrats kept telling you that they couldn't do anything because they didn't have the majority. And now that they have a majority, albeit a slight one, you see how it works in the minority when the Senate Republicans stop, block, obstruct one bill after the next. And you ask yourself, well, why the hell couldn't the Democrats do that for the past 6 years? And just to tie it all back together now to that habeas corpus business, remember that finding last week by the Supreme Court was finding unconstitutional a bill that the Democrats had allowed to pass in the first place.
That's right.
So who is driving this ship? Is anybody? The answer seems to be either nobody's driving it or, once again, it's the Republicans who are driving it, even from the minority.
And I'll offer this, and I just want to preface it by saying this is not an excuse for Pelosi's action. But Faz Shakir filled us in a little bit yesterday from the Center for American Progress that she got cornered by the Blue Dogs. And this goes back to the deal with the devil that they made in 2006 with Rahm Emanuel running the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, because he recruited a bunch of conservative candidates who could fund their own campaigns, and fully half of the freshman members joined the Blue Dog Caucus within the first 6 months of entering the Congress. And it is the Blue Dogs who are so conservative and, you know, often vote like and with Republicans, who I think forced her hand on some of these issues. But I still say that if she played this properly, she could have maneuvered this in a way that would play to the advantage of progressives in the fall election, as opposed to just returning incumbents. And this is where I see there was a real missed opportunity, because if Pelosi had stood on principle and said, I will not release this to the floor until we have a bill that's consistent with the Fourth Amendment and other constitutional values and the original FISA law, and I don't care if it takes until next year, that would be throwing down the gauntlet and giving progressives something to rally around, campaign on, and try to change the composition of the caucus that often is not under her control.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but, you know, we don't have Democrats tend to not work that way, certainly not the ones who are in control. And you're right, Rahm Emanuel, very close to Steny Hoyer, mm-hmm. has miscalculated, you know, once, you know, time and again, but they don't see it that way because they still see themselves winning with the Republicans just in so much trouble. So there's right. that rift right down the middle of the Democratic Party for sure.
We're going to continue with Brad Freeman in a moment. You can call in and talk with us at 888-5 Peter B. In the next segment, we're going to talk about Scott McClellan singing on Capitol Hill for John Conyers today. 888-5 Peter B. That's my toll-free number. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Most mattress commercials feature a laundry list of brands the stores carry. You've heard the familiar names, and they count on that. So no matter what new model is introduced, no matter how good or inferior the components in that model, you'll still relate to the brand. SC41 Furniture carries its own brand, and we think that's good. Because we want you to judge our mattress on its quality and comfort, not just the name. At our store, you can see everything that goes into our mattresses. The durable slat suspension we adjust to each person, the high-grade carbon steel coils that hold their tension and deliver excellent support, latex cushioning made with air-circulating channels and free of all harmful chemicals, ultra-clean wool lining, and stretch cotton mattress covers that feel soft next to your body. You'll find this unique mattress made with only the highest quality components at one place, SC41 Furniture, on 41st Avenue, right off Highway 1, across from the Home Depot in Santa Cruz, on the web at sc41.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and we have grass fires this afternoon. Santa Cruz County Highway 1 in the Watsonville area. Looks like they've reopened the southbound lanes, but heavy traffic as you make your way through the area. Northbound 1 remains shut down at Airport Boulevard in Watsonville. We've had evacuations underway for Buena Vista Drive, Larkin Valley Road, and Calabasas Road. The Watsonville Airport remains shut down as well. From Monterey, southbound 1 ramp over to eastbound 68, the Holman Highway, that may still be shut down. We had an earlier grass fire that was burning up the hillside there, and crews were mopping up. The Munros Avenue on-ramp to southbound 1 still shut down as well. Southbound traffic, last we heard, backed up into Seaside, and northbound traffic backed up into Carmel. Capitola, southbound 1 after Park Avenue, reports of a stalled truck that may be blocking lanes, and heavy traffic southbound 101 Cochran Road down to Dunn Avenue in Morgan Hill. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. I'm Nate Nix with traffic on KRXA.
Hey, where's Barry White when you need him, huh? This portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is brought to you by your fully immunized, monopolistic, fascist phone company. They love you.
We don't know.
Hi, my name is Jeannie, and I work for the phone company.
We don't know.
I'm Larry, and I work for the phone company.
We don't know.
I'm Nancy, and I don't know what I'm doing.
We don't know.
For the only phone company in town, you don't have to know what you're doing, and there's really nothing anybody can do about it. You can try to complain, but you probably won't get through. The phone company.
We don't know what we're doing.
That's a moldy transcription from the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Archives from about 1958, and things haven't changed that much, have they, Brad Friedman?
No, although I think they do know what they're doing, and that was the problem here when they started spying on people like me and you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Brad, it was a bizarre scene in Washington on Friday, and just to set up, you know, there were these hopeful tones this week as we finally confronted some of the torture team about what they did. And with Scott McClellan appearing before Conyers Judiciary Committee today, we had hoped to learn more about the cover-up of Valerie Wilson. And yet, despite those kind of hopeful cracks in the stone wall, here the Democrats were selling us out with a new war funding bill. Oh, it's got the GI Bill and extended unemployment benefits, and this onerous wiretapping bill. So now let's talk a little bit about Scott McClellan. I rolled out of bed early, and then they didn't start on time. And then they got interrupted several times by the FISA debate. But you hung in there, and I see you blogged about it today.
I did. You know, you're right. These Senate Democrats don't make it easy for us West Coast bloggers and radio folks, do they?
No, they don't.
These 6:30 a.m. meetings, only to really get underway for about 15, 20 minutes before they had a break for that for the debate on FISA and so forth. Interesting hearing, nonetheless. Even though McClellan said before he came in that, hey, everything I know, I've already said in my book. And I think that was pretty much borne out. Nothing really new above and beyond what he has said previously here. What was interesting, though, there were a few interesting points. Amongst them, of course, the Republican talking points against Scott McClellan. Most notably, you mentioned Lamar Smith earlier. Lamar Smith is the ranking member of the judiciary, and he just came out and slammed Scott McClellan in what was either obnoxious or amusing, depending on the way you want to look at it. We've got the full transcript of his opening statement there, where he called it the Welcome to the Judiciary Committee Book of the Month Club.
Right, and when he invoked Ann Coulter, I almost threw a shoe at the tube.
Yeah, right. Next month we'll have Ann Coulter's book. You know, minimizing yet again this historic moment in history where a White House has outed, and I think I need to mention this again because it gets lost here, but for the first time in the history of this nation, a White House has outed the covert CIA agent, one who was, of all things, monitoring WMD coming into and out of Iraq and the Middle East before, you know, in the weeks before going to war with this country, purportedly over WMD. To me, this is an astounding thing. To Lamar Smith, it's old news and it's rather amusing. But I'll tell you, what was telling was that even many of the other Republicans on that committee either did not show up at all or were having some trouble going along taking a Lamar Smith lead. They were slightly more respectful to McClellan. And really didn't beat up on him the way that Lamar Smith had set them up to do with his opening statement. So even they had trouble swallowing the notion that we should beat up at this point on Scott McClellan. That I think they recognize that Scott McClellan is pretty much telling the truth here.
Well, we'll talk more about this in the next segment. But what was richly ironic for me was having Scott McClellan sit there being peppered with talking points by Lamar Smith. It was a very interesting reversal of roles.
Strange dynamic indeed.
We're going to take a break and return with his Bradness. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. So join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
Professor David Ray Griffin, author of A New Pearl Harbor, will disclose the truth behind September 11th, Saturday, June 28th at 7 p.m., Church of Religious Science, corner of Franklin and Pacific in Monterey. For information, call 375-2016.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
This is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman with us for another 30 minutes. You're welcome to call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's my nephew Liam answering the phone, so be nice to him. He hasn't even hung up on anybody, and there's only half an hour left.
Guess who just got back today? That wild-eyed boy said it's been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town.
Oh yeah, in Frisco, the boys are back in town, and some of them are getting married this weekend. In fact, my buddy Rob, the caterer, has a gay wedding for Saturday. And this could be the stimulus package that California Governor Schwarzenegger has been looking for, because he said the budget for this gay wedding reception is about double of what the Strato Potatoes usually spend. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com, and we're joined by John calling in from Oakland today. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hey, Peter B. First-time caller.
Welcome. Good to hear from you. In fact, I'll get you a DVD of Uncounted just for calling in.
Well, great. I'm calling because of the things that have happened here in the last day or so. I think it's time for San Francisco voters, Nancy Pelosi's constituents, to get out of denial here and finally realize that she's absolutely betrayed them. And we need to get, what's her name, Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan is running.
November.
Mm-hmm.
Now, City Sheehan needs 10,000 physical signatures by August 9th, I believe it is.
Right, in order to make it onto the ballot as an independent.
Yeah, so she's going to need some help here.
Right, yeah.
Let me tell you. Cindy@cityforcongress.com.
That's right, there's a website, and Cindy's been on the program. We'll have her back. And I just have to tell you candidly, John, that Shirley Golub challenged Pelosi in the Democratic primary and got 12% of the vote. And while I, you know, you are free to espouse your view and Cindy is free to run, I just honestly am a pragmatist. And I would rather see us put energy into getting real progressives elected to Congress because, you know, throwing Pelosi out, you get Steny Hoyer. You throw Steny Hoyer out, you know, the food chain is not populated by progressives very high up in the Democratic leadership. And I understand the anger that people have, and anybody who wants to work for Cindy Sheehan to send that message, you know, that's fine with me. But I'd like to see us get Charlie Brown elected, you know, instead of Tom McClintock up in District 2, or no, that's number 4, where Doolittle is vacating. And, you know, I'd like to see us also put energy into races around the country. There's a great woman named Darcy Berner who is running in the Seattle area in Washington State. And she has a detailed, it's called the Responsible Plan for getting us out of Iraq. And you know, I'm just trying to plead with people. I understand the anger and I understand the desperation that you feel. But Cindy Sheehan doesn't have a practical chance of beating Nancy Pelosi this November. Darcy Berner has an honest chance. She's within 5 points of her Republican incumbent. And so rather than see people piss it away on a symbolic attack on Pelosi, I'd like to see people roll up their sleeves, collect money, and make phone calls for true progressives who could get into Congress and force Pelosi's hand in the direction opposite the Blue Dogs. Your turn, John.
Yeah, I'd like to get some reasons for Nancy Pelosi to be pushed out of office if I can.
Go ahead.
Okay. I've got 13 of them.
Well, give me your favorite three.
Okay. Number one, she abrogated her responsibility to impeach the president, who has clearly violated the Constitution.
Yeah.
It's not in her given powers to remove summarily remove impeachment from the table,
right,
from the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, she purposely weakened the impeachment case against George Bush by allowing that last-minute wiretap laws passed last August. And if you remember, she promised that she was going to fix that.
Right.
And now we see what she's done as far as fixing it today.
It's worse. I agree.
And number three, I guess, would be all of the times that she has caved in as far as these this funding for the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
She gave, was 190 last summer, I believe it was, 70 last December, and now 162. That's a minimum. I think it might have been more than that.
No, it is 162, but it's not all for Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's
altogether, it might have been more than that.
Yeah, it's roughly 145 for the military. So, John, those are all very accurate and deadly criticisms of Nancy Pelosi. My position is the same, that she is, you know, is a very well-protected incumbent. The districts in California are drawn to protect the incumbents. There is no base for an independent candidate in San Francisco. And again, if I have a choice of sending $100 to Cindy Sheehan to lose or $100 to Darcy Berner to win, I think I've made my position clear.
I believe that Cindy Sheehan had a great chance to win. She has a name recognition for one thing, and that her start, she has at least 20% of the vote, I would say, right now. And it's gonna, with a three-way race, it's going to take maybe 45% to win.
Whoa, 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 whoa. When you talk about a three-way race, the Republican candidate in the 8th Congressional District typically gets about 9%.
Okay. And about 90% for the other two.
Right. And so, you know, it's not the kind of three-way race where Cindy Sheehan could get in with 35 or 40% of the vote.
I also believe a lot of Republicans would be fed up with Nancy Pelosi would put their vote on to Cindy Sheehan.
But there aren't any.
Well,
the numbers of Republicans are so low, John. This is, you know, it's the math. And I understand why, you know, you support Cindy Sheehan, and I support her on the issues. It's simply a pragmatic decision on my part that I don't believe that she can win, and therefore I want to put support behind people who can. Let's get a comment from Brad. He's been sitting here listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me see if I can broker some peace between you. First off, they also have instant runoff voting, don't they, up there in San Francisco? If it did split between three different people and Pelosi did not get the more than 50%, I think there would be a runoff, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if that applies to...
I don't think it applies to federal races. I think it's only the city and county races that have the instant runoff.
All right, well, then let me try a different way to broker the piece. Go ahead and sign those signatures for free to get Cindy on the ballot, but save your money, as you suggest, for those progressive candidates. And then, since I know how to flip those Sequoia voting machines right here with my cell phone, I'll take care of getting Cindy in after that. Okay.
We've got the conspiracy hatched here, John. How's that?
Right. Well, I believe that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can elect these other candidates and also get city elected.
All right. Thank you, John.
I believe the onus is on the San Francisco constituency to do something about her.
Okay. I appreciate your point of view, and I'm glad you called the show today.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to talk to you. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to weigh in, 888-573-8372. There's another call coming in, Liam. Liam is manning the phones today. So, Brad, I want to come back to Scott McClellan and the session before John Conyers today, because those of us who support Dennis Kucinich in his effort to lay out an impeachment trail, if only to catalog the law-breaking and constitutional violations of this administration, there were some interesting mentions from John Conyers, one in his introductory comments, that he thought that he may or may not be talking about impeachable offenses.
Yeah, that was really the subtext, I think, for the entire hearing today was, in fact, impeachment. And you heard a number of the both the Democrats and the Republicans talk about impeachment. It was really the Republicans who seemed to talk about it in many ways more. They're really on the defensive. They should be, because there's certainly enough evidence to begin impeachment hearings tomorrow. But for whatever reason, they believe the Democrats aren't going to go through with it, and that's probably true given what Nancy Pelosi has said and so forth. But it was the subtext, and you heard Linda Sanchez talk about it, Barbara Jackson Lee talk about impeachment. So that's the subtext for all of this, and yet, where does it go? What will they do with it? Apparently nothing. So I was delighted to see Kucinich say, look, if you guys are going to let this thing die, I'm coming back in 30 days. If you're going to let it die in committee, I'm coming back in 30 days, and I'm going to launch 60 articles instead of 35. Now, I worked a bit with his office on some of those articles, so I know he means business, and he can do that. And what he does after that, if he has to keep adding to it every 30 days, so be it. But somehow you have to get it on the record, on the historical record, just what this administration has done. So I support him in that effort. And it's, you know, again, very frustrating when you were talking to that caller, John. You know, part of me wants to say, look, get a Democrat in the White House so you at least have a co-equal branch. A Democrat is guaranteed a co-equal branch. But after that, when it comes to these folks in the House, I'll let you guys fight about Pelosi and Sheehan and everything else. I'm to the point where I want to say, you guys in the House, you're on your own. If you're not signing on to impeachment and accountability here, you know, folks like Wexler and so forth, other than them, you guys are on your own. Doesn't mean I'm going to vote against you. Doesn't mean I'm going to support your whoever you're running against. But it's real hard to get too excited about doing anything to help these guys return to office to do the same damn thing again, even in 2009.
Well, knowing that, that's why I think they scheduled these sucky votes for June. They're hoping that by November we will have forgotten about this.
Yeah, I think they are. Now, on the other hand, there's some interesting, as I talked about this impeachment subtext, there is some interesting rumblings. Amongst them, you know, we're headed towards this showdown now to a certain extent. I think it's July 10th or 20th now, I can't remember, with Karl Rove, who has been subpoenaed, and they have been talking about whether he's going to show up or not, and if they don't, using that inherent contempt power. And Wexler indeed spoke about that again today during his questioning of McClellan. And in that case, the House actually has the right to send out the sergeant of arms to arrest these guys, and they do have a jail cell in the basement of the Capitol. Now, it seems unlikely that they're going to do anything like that, yet we've been hearing a lot of talk about that. What will they do if Rove does not show up? And then you've got still another option, which became clear to me the other day based on a comment coming out of Obama's camp, which is that, you know, in truth, they are not necessarily done with this business. Once a new president comes in, presuming that president would be Obama, they may continue with this stuff, and then they could hold these guys in contempt, inherent or otherwise, once they're back in control of the DOJ.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question is, are they going to come in and they say, oh, that's in the past, we don't want to, you know, continue with that. That sounds like the Democratic, capital D thing to do. But maybe they won't. Maybe they will hold some accountability. I hate to hold that out there as hope, because we all had hope after 2006, and look what they did.
Yeah.
But there are some possibilities ahead here.
Let's talk to Stephen and Salinas. Hello, Stephen. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Brad Friedman.
Good afternoon. I have a couple of things. One, I was wondering, might be possible for Cindy Sheehan to get together with Shirley Gollop and run as a team, sort of, and just pile on without, you know, without spending a whole bunch of money to get two of them working together. Maybe they could really open some eyes.
Well, Shirley got aced out in the primary,
yeah.
So she can't run again.
No, but she could help Cindy, is my point. Campaign with Cindy. Cindy's the candidate,
right?
And Shirley could help her. I think.
Yeah, Steve. You know, I hate to be raining on this parade.
I know,
but the numbers just aren't there.
I've heard you.
Yeah.
And something else that may be more important is I'm not sure these folks in Congress have any idea what's going on. I don't know how many people I've talked to there in their offices asking about PNAC, and everybody I call. Have you guys ever heard of PNAC? And nobody's ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
They've never heard of a new Pearl Harbor. And I have a feeling these people in Congress, they spend all their time running for elections.
Well, they spend a lot of time raising money. You're right about that.
They don't. Somebody asked, I bet half of them don't even know that this spying started, you know, 2 weeks after they took office.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if half the people in Congress didn't know that.
Well, they certainly should know better. Thank
they
you,
should,
Steve.
But they don't.
We got to take a break. We'll return with Brad Friedman and give you an update on former Rove crony Bradley Schlotzman. Straight ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Checking traffic for the final time this evening on KRXA. We have continuing problems in Santa Cruz County because of that grass fire. Highway 1, the southbound lanes have reopened, but heavy traffic Marmonte down to Buena Vista. Northbound 1 is still shut down at Airport Boulevard in Watsonville. Heavy traffic approaching the scene there. We've had evacuations underway for Buena Vista, Larkin Valley, as well as Calabasas Road. At this point, it's burned over 500 acres. Now, Freedom Boulevard at Corralitos Road in Santa Cruz County, reports of a grass fire popping up there. Looks like fire department may be on the scene. And southbound 1 over to eastbound 68 may still have a lane shut down there. We had a grass fire there earlier. Looks like fire department still on the scene mopping up. Look for heavy traffic both directions of Highway 1 approaching the scene. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know if the airbags in that used car you're buying work? Step 1 to finding out. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
At
With Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
You love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
It's time for more.
Yeah, from the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell.
On the Peter B. Show.
Fire in a soul, it was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the air as she started to dance. Every soul in the room keeping time with her hands. And we sang, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. And the voices rang like the angels sing. And we sang, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. And we danced on into the night.
8 minutes in front of the hour from the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com in the Bradmobile, live from an undisclosed location on the Oregon coast. He's ready to get some fun into his system, and certainly hope you find that and find it soon.
Thank you, sir. I look forward to it.
Brad, I wanted to get an update on Bradley Schlotzman. He was one of these cronies of Karl Rove who got one of those U.S. attorney assignments. And, well, now we're seeing him get a little more attention. What's going on?
Yeah, Bradley Schlotzman was one of these voter fraud phonies who was pushing, voter fraud all over the country and bringing charges against Democrats. You'll recall that he was hauled in front of Patrick Leahy in a pretty extraordinary exchange concerning an indictment that Schlotzman had brought just prior to the 06 election for voter registration fraud in defiance of the DOJ's rules, written rules, that say do not bring election-related indictments just prior to an election when it might affect that election. Now, he was hauled before Leahy's committee and said at the time that he was told by the Office of Public Integrity that he should bring these indictments. And in fact, after that testimony, the Office of Public Integrity said, well, no, we did not tell you to bring those indictments, and he had to retract his statement. With that background now, it has been reported that the DOJ has now referred the entire matter to a grand jury, and they may bring indictments against Bradley Schlotzman for perjury, presumably surrounding that testimony that he gave in Congress. So that will be interesting. Schlotzman is by no means off the hook and by no means beloved by his former colleagues, the career appointees at the DOJ, who are delighted to see him finally gone, and there is no love lost between them. So we may see indictments for perjury against this voter fraud zealot phony, Brad Schlossman, in the months ahead.
And not directly, but linked through the U.S. attorney scandal, the New York Times, Monday or Tuesday this past week, had a very positive editorial about the case of Don Siegelman. And I hope they will continue to draw attention to it, because he's only gotten spotty coverage, and he really is at the center of the case that could bring Rove to Capitol Hill and force him to testify, and could crack open this whole can of worms about the firing of U.S. attorneys, and in most cases they were fired for, unlike Brad Schlossman, unwillingness to bring these phony charges of voter fraud, usually timed to an upcoming election.
It could open up crack open a lot of can of worms, including electronic vote fraud, and this is something, election fraud, this is something that goes back to 2002, which the mainstream media has just not reported, despite the fact that you've got a former governor sitting there saying, hey, I went to bed in 2002 having won the election, and when I woke up, it had been flipped against me, and I believe it was electronic election fraud, and someone tampered with the voting machine. Yes, it is that easy to do so, and so you could open up quite a few cans of worms if that Siegelman prosecution moves forward. And I can, Peter, you and I haven't gotten to talk about this, but I can talk to you about it firsthand now, as far as how easy it is to flip votes, because my own vote flipped in Los Angeles County a couple weeks ago during the state primary up there. Four of my votes, before my very eyes, were printed out for other candidates other than whom I actually voted for on those machines.
Now, I took a look at the blog post on this, and you were given an audio ballot. Now, you're not blind. Why did you get an audio ballot?
Well, I asked to vote on the machine. It had been the second time in a row that I had shown up in my precinct, and the electronic voting system that is... You remember, it was the blind and disabled that they have been using to say, oh, we need to have these electronic machines. So I said I would like to vote on it, but twice in a row, the audio ballot, the disabled voting device, had been down and couldn't use it. But there was a precinct in the same polling place, you know, across the room. Their machine was up and working, and I said, well, I would like to vote on that. Nobody had voted on it the entire day, nor had they voted on it on Super Tuesday. Nobody uses these machines. It was a phony principle in the first place to encourage these electronic voting machines. Nonetheless, I went ahead and used it and voted with an audio ballot, and luckily I'm not blind in this case, because had I been blind, I would have had no idea that the computer printed out four candidates for whom I did not vote. It's remarkable. And since that happened, I was able to get in touch with the Secretary of State and the L.A. County Registrar, Acting Registrar Dean Logan. One wonders, if I didn't have previous relationships with them, would they have paid attention at all? But they did. They isolated those machines, and now Dean Logan has a theory as to why my ballots were misprinted. They are blaming the poll workers. And just to give you an update, they're saying that the poll workers punched in the wrong code. To give you a quick update, I heard yesterday from L.A. County they would like me to come in, and they want to demonstrate what they believe happened. And we hope we can organize that in the next couple of weeks once I'm back in town, because I would like to see their theory in action, if that is really what happened, if it was the poll workers' fault.
Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Happy trails to you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother. Bye-bye.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines, that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered, to my extreme surprise, that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Cautious optimism tonight in the Midwest flood zone. Experts have revised their forecast for the lower Mississippi. They now say the river will crest about 3 feet lower than expected earlier. That's because so much water has spilled over the levees upstream.
It looks like we're past in large part, except for still watching Mississippi, still waiting for cresting in Wisconsin. Looks like we're past the danger point and are moving now into the recovery area.
Deputy FEMA Director Harvey Johnson. Where there are floods, whole families have been displaced, and that includes their pets.
This is Jim Crisill in Winfield, Missouri. It's become part of the response to natural disasters, caring for the pets of victims.
You know, what we're doing is getting these animals in a comfortable place, taking care of their immediate needs, getting them decontaminated if they've been in the floodwaters, making sure that they have good, nutritious food.
Debbie Hill is with the Humane Society of Missouri. Jim Crisill, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
Former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan has been telling his story over and over as he promotes his book. Today, he told it on Capitol Hill.
This is a very secretive White House that tends to be pretty compartmentalized and very disciplined in terms of what message or talking points they put out there, and there's some things that they would prefer not to be talked about.
More from CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss.
Some Republicans railed against McClellan, saying he's betraying the president, but McClellan calmly answered every question, saying the Bush administration misled the American people about the war in Iraq and the CIA leak case. He said Vice President Cheney, Karl Rove, and Scooter Libby have information they're still withholding on that case, though he said he wasn't sure, based on his experience, if they could be counted on to tell the truth.
McClellan says he doesn't think President Bush knew about the effort to out CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson, but believes the president tried to protect aides who were involved. Barack Obama's fundraising machine might need some oil. The campaign says it raised $22 million in May, its weakest fundraising month this year. Obama has $43 million on hand. Next week, he launches a push to win over Hillary Clinton supporters. The former rivals will campaign together, and they'll meet privately in Washington with some of Clinton's financial backers. Homeland Security says it's about to tell 7,000 businesses that they're considered high.